Hey there, folks. You're listening to Inside the Desert Oasis Room, episode number 38. This episode is sponsored by Tanduay Rum. Established in the Philippines in 1854, Tanduay is the world's largest rum producer and winner of over 170 international medals in the past four decades, including Brand of the Year in London's World Branding Awards Rum category from 2015 to 2017 and Rum Brand Champion of the World by thespiritsbusiness.com in 2015. As sponsor of the Inside the Desert Oasis Room podcast and the toast to Master Ninja Ray Buen at the legendary Tiki Tea in Los Angeles, California, Tanduay Rum is the perfect companion to celebrate all things tiki. For more information, check out their webpage at tanduayus.com or follow them on Facebook or Instagram at tanduayusa. This podcast is also sponsored in part by the Royal Hawaiian. Founded in Laguna Beach, California in 1947, the Royal Hawaiian is South Orange County's premier tropical drink and dining destination. Come try their signature cocktail, the Lapu Lapu, a delicious combination of tropical fruit juices with a generous float of dark spirits, or other island-inspired favorites like ahi tuna poke or the dynamite crab-crusted mahi mahi. Enjoy their delicious brunch or drop in for happy hour from 2:30 to 5:30 p.m. daily for drink specials and more. To make a reservation, visit RoyalHawaiianLB.com. On this episode, we speak with Jason T. Smith. You might know Jason from the reality TV show Thrift Hunters on Spike TV, Thrifty Business with JNA on YouTube, or as the head honcho of the Thrifting Board on Facebook. Jason makes the drive out from Las Vegas to hang out here at the Desert Oasis Room for a couple cocktails and a spirited conversation about tiki, thrifting, game shows, reality TV, life in Las Vegas, and more. As you all know, this podcast does not exist without the help of our sponsors or our listeners. So if you'd like to help, please visit PolynesianPop.podomatic.com and click on the donate button. Every donation, no matter how small, keeps the podcast coming to you every week. I hope you enjoy this episode as much as we did bringing it to you. Here's my conversation with Jason T. Smith.
My goal was to binge listen to you all the way to here, which I did, but I was hoping to be done, like caught up.
Yeah, I mean, like you're looking at probably some of them are 2 hours long.
Yeah, so
you're
right, yeah.
At like 70 hours.
So yeah. I'm at number 11 right now. Mo, okay. And what's the other girl's name?
Linda Noel.
Yeah.
Mo and
so,
Linda.
You know, you were talking about on that one about how you were going to go video. And then you ended up, you know, you couldn't get it right. And now that I'm in the room, I get it.
Yeah.
And as I've started listening to them, I've given you some pointers, which you've fixed by now, because I'm listening to number one, and you're on number, like, 35.
Right.
But I was bummed that it wasn't video, because you like to see these places, but by number 11, I'm like, oh, no, it's way better.
I'm glad that you said that.
As a podcast, because it feels like I have wandered into a tiki bar and a conversation going on.
Yeah, the idea is you're eavesdropping in on a conversation.
Right. And it's so I do all kinds of, I do three YouTube shows a week. So, of course, it's all very visual. But I really dig the fact that it's a podcast because I fully am now painting a picture of what's happening, right or wrong.
Sure.
My mental eye has painted what's going on. And some of the people that you talk to are close friends of mine and some I've never met. So I have these, now I have to go look them up because I have these visions of what people look like.
Yeah.
based on their voice.
It's funny, is I have that too.
You know?
Has anybody ever said that to you about your voice?
Yeah, well, my voice definitely goes with me, you know, especially if you're...
It totally fits.
So if you start standing next to me, you're like, man, you're a big
dude. If I look at an old photo of you, it doesn't fit the old photo.
Okay.
To me, because you were skinny, full of hair, and it just, I don't...
Oh, that old. So even
like the old, like from like the 90s.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, so, well, I was working out quite a bit. A guy I worked with, he had a gym membership. He was a big weightlifter kind of guy. I mean, not big as in bulky, but big as in he did it every day.
Right.
And so I started going to the gym with him. And so, yeah, I was slim, trim, and pretty cut. I mean, I didn't have a six-pack or anything, but I felt good. And, my biggest downfall in my weight is when I got the infection in my arm, and I was kind of out of commission for a year.
Oh, is that what that scar is on there?
Yeah, which is now covered by a shrunken head tattoo.
Right.
Courtesy of Dirk Vermin. Shout out to Pussycat Tattoos.
There you go.
But, you know, I almost lost my arm. I almost lost my life. And I was I was in great depression for quite a while. And being right-handed and not having the use of your right arm for a long time really messes with you.
Yeah.
And some depression, and then didn't feel like doing anything but, you know, laying around feeling sorry for myself. And so, you know, the weight slowly crept on. And then, you know, I enjoy cocktails and I enjoy food.
Yeah.
And so I would do just enough working out so that I wasn't, like, really crazy obese. And then when the first digit on the scale read a 3, that was enough. That was it, man.
Yeah.
I'm a big dude. If you're listening to this and you've never seen me, I'm 6'5", and I'm all, like, chest and upper body. But I never want to be 300 pounds. I'm happy and comfortable around 250s. And so in February, I said, screw this. I'm a fat pig. Plus, I'm going to Europe, so I didn't want to be the fat guy in an 11-hour flight, too. So I got my shit together, and since February, and while we're recording this, it's June, I've lost almost 40 pounds.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so I feel great.
You do look thinner, especially on your videos.
Everyone's like, my God, your face is so much thinner. And all my weight's in my belly, so I didn't think my head was that fat, but man, everyone has said that. My head must have been huge.
Well, you know, like, you look the same to me in person, but on pictures and video, you can really see the difference.
Yeah. I'll tell you where this played in well. I bought a vintage Maikai Waiters shirt. Now, not vintage, like 50 years old, but not, I don't think, current. Okay. So maybe 20-year vintage. And it was marked extra large, and they sold it way too little, and I was going to flip it. And I got it home. I got it last night in the mail, and I'm like, cool. I was thinking I'd flip it for, like, I don't know, $100. I bought it for $30. And I'm like, man, that looks like it'll fit me. And I put it on, and it fits me right now.
That's awesome.
I'm still working on losing another 10 pounds or so, 12 pounds. And I'm like, holy shit, I have a Maikai vintage shirt that I was going to flip that fits me.
So what did you do? Are you just watching what you eat?
So I joined Weight Watchers. Okay. And I fully feel no matter what you do in life, so whether it's you want to lose weight, if you want to learn a trade, anything, if you pay money for the help or for the instruction, I feel it'll be more important to you.
Sure.
Because you don't want to waste your money.
Because you have skin in the game.
I've tried Weight Watchers on my own, just the online at home. And even though, thank you, sir. Even though they're not going to yell at me for not losing weight, I feel I'm paying money. Yeah. I better get my damn money's worth. And I want it when I weigh in, I want the number to always be lower than the week before. Could be 8/10 of a pound, but as long as it's lower,
you know, like that's why it's important to get a scale that has 1/10 of a pound.
Yep.
Because even if you go down 2/10 of a pound, it's still progress. This is a pineapple daiquiri, by the way.
Oh my God, that's amazing. And we are morning drinking. I'm an advocate for day drinking. I don't usually morning drink, but the way my schedule worked this week, it is morning drinking.
All right, I'm going to sit down here with you.
But yeah, so that's why I can't remember the first question, but yeah, I wanted to lose weight. Oh, you said look at the old pictures. Yeah, friends who know me now, when they see pictures when I don't have any facial hair and a full head of hair, they're like, there's no way that's you. And what's shocking to me
I recognize your face. I just don't. It's like everything else is different.
Right.
Like, your face is the same, and your smile
I had no tattoos back then.
Yeah, right.
You know. But what's shocking to me is about 4 years ago, we're sitting in an outdoor concert in Vegas, but it was bleachers. And I get a text from a cousin I haven't seen in 20 years, and he goes, hey, enjoying the Poison show? And I'm like, are you here? He goes, yeah. And I go, where? By the time I could figure out where he was so far away from me. He hasn't seen me with a beard. He hasn't seen me bald. He hasn't seen me covered in tattoos. And I'm like, how the hell did you recognize me in a crowd of like 12,000 people? I mean, and I was sitting down.
And that's what I was going to ask, is how did he know that you were there?
He just saw me and realized it was me, which blew me.
Wow.
Now, he doesn't look any different, just a little bit older, but the same dude. And I'm like, I was really shocked that you, and I was sitting down. If I was standing up, I stick out. But we were in the front row of our section, and I'm older. I like to sit when I can.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
I'm glad you like
it. Oh, that's a great start.
I want to ask you if you remember how we met.
Well, we met many, many moons ago in a little thriving metropolis called Palm Springs.
So this was probably Tiki Oasis number three.
Yeah.
I think it was 2003.
Yeah. And we had just gotten in the tiki scene, my wife and I hadn't met anyone yet. Now, as outgoing and verbose as I am, that was our second tiki event. And we didn't talk to anyone really at the first one we went to. We just kind of observing and enjoying the scene.
You were sitting right in front of me. So it was during a Saturday show.
Yep.
They had vendors on the grass, yep. Right? The vendors clear out so that they have room for people to put their lawn chairs and watch the Saturday entertainment. And I was sitting on a lawn chair, and there was a beach ball bouncing around.
Well, there was a lot because of the wedding.
Oh, was it the wedding?
Yes, that's why all the beach balls were there.
Okay.
So instead of throwing rice...
Well, I remember the beach balls were printed, right?
Yeah.
They said Tiki Central on them.
Yeah. So, and I still have one in my house somewhere. But yeah, so instead of throwing rice, we all threw beach balls. And so the rest of the day, there was just beach balls
everywhere. Beach balls everywhere. There were hundreds of them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that were ordered. And so these beach balls were bouncing around. There were multiple beach balls bouncing around. And there was this couple, an older couple, which was... I mean, like, we were at Tiki Oasis, and they were annoyed that they kept getting hit by beach balls because they were coming down, you know, from the sky, right, and bouncing into them.
And it wasn't like someone was standing a foot away from them and winding up and trying to smash them in the face. You know, they were just bouncing around like you would
at
a concert, you know?
So then the beach balls would bounce to them, and then they'd get annoyed, and what's the word I'm looking for? Anyway, they would do two things.
They would
grunt and moan.
They would deflate them. And they were so drunk that they were sitting in the middle of the lawn in lawn chairs, and they were sticking the beach balls as they would hit them underneath their chair like they'd be hidden.
Right.
Just reaching from underneath their chair and grabbing them.
That's right.
And throwing them back
into
play.
Right.
You know, drunk thought process. I'm going to hide these beach balls underneath my open lawn chair in the middle of the lawn.
Well,
there should have been 30 under there, but of course there was never any because I kept throwing them back into play.
the best part is, I think you got caught, right?
She caught me, and she had a deflated one in her hand because she also had started grabbing them and ripping them apart like Hulk smash.
Right.
And she caught me taking one and throwing it back out.
Right.
And she started hitting me in the face and the head.
She started beating you over the head with a deflated beach ball.
She was
right.
An old lady, and there was a point where I didn't know what to do. I'm like... We're in the middle of a crowd. There's a band on stage. And if you're hearing this, you've never been to the Palm Springs Tiki Oasis, way smaller.
Oh, yeah.
So the crowd in front of the stage was a few hundred, where nowadays it's a few thousand.
Right.
And finally, I grabbed her wrist after she hit me about the fourth or fifth time. I go, look, old lady, I have never hit a woman, but you might be the first. If you hit me in the head one more time, I am going to pop you.
You guys were sitting right in front of me. And when I saw that, I saw you stand up and you're like, what's your problem? We're at a party. And I thought, holy shit, this guy's big. And you stood up and you were looking down at everybody.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. But, you know, looking back, you weren't the only friend I met that day. And I don't recall everyone because we've been now friends for so many years.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I met a lot of people because of that.
Because
it got posted on Tiki Central. People talked about it. I'm sure that someone's listening to us right now that I have not talked to in many years for whatever reason. They're like, I remember that.
Well, I remember when they walked off, I remember looking at you and just laughing and shaking my head and going, dude, what was that about? And you're like, I don't know. And then I think it was a room party later on. And of course, that was the talk of the room party, right?
Oh, yeah.
Did you see that couple out there? That guy had all these... I think they were like Sailor Jerry style tattoos.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Yes, he did. And that was a good thing. Like I said, you know, it was weird. We made a conscious effort to get into Tiki. Not that we knew there was a scene when we made this effort, but we had just moved from Cleveland, my wife and I, to Long Beach. We live in the Belmont Shore area, and we're near one of the lagoons. So we're about a mile and a half from the ocean. And we were at the fourth inning Zimino, and we were right behind the lagoon. And our condo had three lanais. Front one off the... I had a wet bar in the condo over the pool, and then one off the back over the lagoon. So it was like, I moved from Cleveland winters to like what you would picture Southern California living is. Like, this is idyllic. It's awesome. And so about 6 months in there, I'm looking around our house, and I'm like, okay, I've had enough of the Cleveland decor. And it wasn't like Cleveland stuff. It was just like, this is what came with us from Cleveland. So wife comes home from work, Stacy, and I said, hey, Stace, I want to change all our crap. She goes, what do you want to do? I go, let's do tiki, beachy, Polynesian-y, pirate-y.
Yeah, you just wanted to assimilate into the whole warm weather lifestyle.
And not knowing there was just 2 years earlier, like this kind of rebirth with Otto starting with the events.
Oh, that's interesting.
With Sven writing the book. I didn't know all that was happening yet. So, you know, we had the internet back in 2000, but it wasn't speedy.
Yeah.
But I was starting to look around online and Shag had just come out and he was doing his newest print up at the Starlight Room. Up on 4th Street in Long Beach. And we lived on 4th and Zimino.
Right.
And so we could walk. And I said, hey.
Starlight Room. I haven't heard that in a long time.
So I said, hey, there's this new guy in the scene. I like his art. I want to go buy a piece of his art. And so she's like, cool. So I showed her Shag's work. And we go up there. Now, those of you who know Shag now and know the Disney stuff and the rides at Disneyland, the event started at 7 o'clock. We were the first two people at 6:45.
That's crazy.
How unknown he was.
Right.
And I even said to the proprietor of the Starlight Room, I go, the event's tonight, right? And he goes, yeah. I go, is this the whole turnout?
Yeah.
He goes, well, there's three people out back. So at that moment, there was five people there. He's like, you want a beer? I'm like, okay, sure. So we met Shag, super nice guy, bought a Calypso. It was a diptych. It was a two-piece. And that was a start. And then right away, we found out there was a tiki event happening at the Hard Rock in Vegas called Mondo Tiki. So we quickly booked a room and headed out to Vegas and liked it. And then found out, because we saw on stage, we saw Cherry Capri and the Thurston Hollies.
Ape. Because I was at that event, too.
Yeah. Mike Igents, right? I think they were there.
I believe they were.
Yep. And then I met Danny. Tiki Diablo. And I actually talked to Shag a little bit more at that event. And then I found out Oasis was happening where we met. So we then quickly found out there was a scene, not knowing there was a scene.
Right.
And kind of was one of the first ones in it. You guys were already in it, but we were quick to adapt and assimilate and get into it.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And we love it. And we've loved it ever since. So
yeah. And now you're this tiki authority on your thrifting board.
Yeah. Yeah. So I teach others how to thrift and how to sell online. And, you know, I've been collecting like you, and I've been reading and attending and just absorbing it all over all these years. I'm like, shit, I got a lot to teach.
Yeah.
I mean, because there's, when you teach somebody about mugs, especially, you know, this Tiki Bob's worth 100, but this one's worth 500. And to the novice, you would never know why. And so people who follow me, who learn from me, if I'm going to teach them something, I want them to realize that, I'm sure with anything too, but in our world, there's nuances that change things from $10 to $100.
Right, right.
And so I don't want anyone ever to think they're getting $100 for a $10 item. And I also don't want anyone to ever sell a $10 item worth $100.
Right.
Now, I know I've been listening to your podcast. I know you complain how the prices have gone up. And I'm sure I have some responsibility to that. But,
well, maybe. I'll tell you this much. It was going to happen whether you were had any hand in that or not. The truth is that the internet and eBay changed the game.
Absolutely.
There's just no way around it. I mean, if you didn't teach people how to make money off of, you know, secondhand goods, somebody would have.
No, and tiki is not the only thing I teach. I teach a lot. Like,
yeah.
I teach bras. I teach purses. I teach pajamas.
Yeah.
So I teach a lot. Tiki is just one of my many facets that I teach. But, you know, I know it inside and out. I mean, I stumped you on the third mug I pointed out in your, in your room.
I still don't remember who it was that made.
And I'm sure there's some in mind.
Oh, it was Babalu. That's who made it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a cool mug. But yeah, and what's cool for me teaching, especially the tiki part, I did a webinar, which I think you at least watched one of them.
I watched the first one. Okay. I haven't watched the second one. I meant to watch the second one. I just haven't.
Yeah, I mean, it's good because
the first one was great. Actually, I'm getting all my commissions from that now.
Nice.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for helping.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Well, it was, you know, the timing was right because there were arguments about what is tiki, you know, and there's of course a lot of people that are saying, oh, it's a state of mind, it's whatever you want it to be, which is not right. Right. That's not true. It is defined.
It is very defined.
It's very defined. It's defined in books. It's defined in some documentaries that people have made. And then if you become really active in the scene, you start learning about, you know, the nuances about why things are accepted and why things are not accepted as tiki. And what, a week later, you were going to be doing the seminar, What is Tiki, right?
Yeah, because so, there's a lot of dust up in Facebook groups on Tiki right now. And I fully appreciate that, you know, there's two ends. There's the end that you and I are at, And then there's the Jimmy Buffett parrot head end.
Mm-hmm.
And we only know a couple people that cross those divide.
Right.
Very few.
Right. I can count them on one hand.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
But And I've been a parrot head. I've seen Buffett in concert many times. I enjoyed the party, but I'm much more into this side. Like, I fully appreciate the history and the collecting. But, you know, when new people discover it, like I did, here, I want to tell you a story I've never told anyone, and it involves you.
Uh-oh.
Involves you.
I'm going to start making our second drink.
All right.
While you tell the story.
So, you know, I get into the tiki scene accidentally, really, you know, as I just told you.
Uh-huh.
And I find Tiki Central, and you guys are all well-established, and you have tiki names. Now, for those of you who don't know, I'm guessing everyone who listens to your podcast knows, but, you know, tiki bars are called Polynesian Pop. That's what it is. It is not true. It's not historical tikis. It is the fanciful versions of Don and Vic and those who followed after him. And the whole thing is called Polynesian Pop. Well, your Tiki Central name was Polynesian Pop.
That's correct.
So to a new person, I had no fucking clue what was going on. Because I thought people were talking about you all the time.
Oh, really?
And so I'm like, this guy must be super popular. Because everyone
talks
about Polynesian Pop.
That's funny.
And then, of course, anytime you do, like when people learn when people learn thrifting stuff, there are acronyms and words that we use too that to a novice you might not understand. And so in my Facebook group, we have a file of acronyms to help people out.
Oh, so I didn't know that there was a file because I had to figure them out on my own. Like Bolo, I had to figure out on my own.
Okay, now, did you never watch a 1960s cop show?
Which ones?
Any of them. They always put out bolos for the perp.
Oh, okay. So I didn't know that.
Yeah. But.
And then there's another one that I can't remember what it was. You guys used quite a few acronyms.
Wifey, Sarah.
Sarah, that's the other one.
Oh, Sarah, that's right to this. Take all the shitty tiki mugs, the ones that the parrot head fans would take.
I know what it means now.
Yeah. So accoutrement, Libby, definitely Dynasty Wholesale. Anytime you find those mugs, instead of purchasing them, Sarah them. Sarah stands for smash and run away. Please rid the world of these shitty, horrific tiki mugs that are just horrible.
Now, did you make that one up?
Yeah.
You did?
Okay. Yeah. We started talking about what to... I kept saying, look, smash and run away.
Right.
And somebody just broke it down. They're like, let's call it a Sarah. You know, one of my other friends. And so I've been saying it, but I hadn't thought of it as an acronym. But yeah, in my group, we want to make it as easy as possible for people to get into the game fresh. And there's like 102 files in the file section. What happens if my shipping label won't print on eBay? Well, here's a whole file on how to get around it. What, you know, acronyms. So most people don't realize that Facebook groups have files. Not everybody who runs a group uses the file section, but we do. We have the most documented files of any group I've ever been in.
Yeah, I've got to spend more time in your file section. So, I mean, like in my group, in the Home Tiki Bar Builds group, we're just starting to do files. But I think that a lot of it is better visually because it's about, you know, this is how you build a tiki bar.
Oh, you can have visual in the files. It's just things that are easy to get back to. So anything could be in the files.
Okay.
Videos, pictures, words, whatever.
Right.
But when you want something that you always need. So when a new person comes in and says, is Red Stripe tiki? You could have a list. Things that are Caribbean that aren't tiki or something like that. You know, you could have a list of people. If you direct them to that, then after a while, the group starts doing your work for you. They'll like, hey, new guy, check out the files. Good stuff in there.
Right.
Oh, let me give a shout out to my group, the Thrifting Board.
Yeah, give a shout out to your group.
Come on over to the Thrifting Board. It's a free group. We've got 29,000 thrifters in it who love to help each other.
That's crazy.
You know,
29,000.
And we only opened in September, October of 2015. And so it's been less than 2 years, 29,000 members.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, it's rewarding to see people succeed too, because when I do the webinars, and this one happened to be Tiki, but I've done other webinars unrelated to Tiki, I have a subscription-based Facebook group also. And so that is always the catalyst to join the group.
Right.
And then there we dive deeper into subjects, and I do one webinar a month for the group, and I have a guest do a webinar a month, and I do extra special shows and how-to videos and all kinds of stuff. And the reward of all my hard work and helping people, I could tell you 1,000 stories, but I'll only tell you one quick one. A lady in my group about a year and a half ago was so poor she couldn't afford a bus pass in her town.
Oh, really?
And a month and a half ago, bought her first brand new car.
That's awesome. And this is just from thrifting.
Yeah, and she
does it full time?
She didn't pay it cash. But she didn't put down the minimum either. She goes, I put down about a third down payment on a brand new 2017 Hyundai. And so all my hard work and all the, I have 10 admins who we call lifeguards because my whole group is beach themed. I said all the hard work of them keeping the group on point and no negativity and no conspiracy theories have helped people turn their life around. You can't afford a bus pass a year and a half later, you're buying a new car. That's crazy.
You're going to kill me for this, but I just figured out why you call it Secret Beach, because it's beach themed.
Well, there's two parts of that. There's two parts of that. Yes.
I'm slow that way. If you listen to the podcast,
I've heard you get.
Know that the I just figured out why the Doobie Brothers call themselves the Doobie Brothers.
Oh, I heard that, and then that when I found out you had never seen Time Bandits, we're the same age. How did see Time Bandits? That blows my mind.
So I went online this weekend looking for Time Bandits. I went to Netflix and I went to Prime, and I couldn't find it without paying for it. And I didn't want to pay for it.
Oh, how much was it?
Oh, I don't know.
$3?
I don't know.
Can we leave $3 on the counter here?
But when I think about like how many thousands of free TV and movies there are on Prime and Netflix, I'm kind of opposed to like, you know.
See, I've watched so many things that I already pay for because I pay for Netflix and I pay for Prime. But that one time I'm like, I got to rent something for $3. That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the cheap guy in me, you know? So, and then I even checked YouTube because sometimes people load full movies on YouTube. So,
oh, you should have told me. I have it on DVD. I'll let you borrow it.
Oh, well, next time. Now we know.
Yeah. But, so when I decided to make the new Facebook group a year and a half ago, I wanted to make it not tiki themed, but beach themed because you surf the web. So it's the thrifting board because you need a surfboard.
So now I get the tie-in. See, I'm slow about that stuff.
So instead of admins, we have lifeguards. You know why we have lifeguards? Because riding the seas of e-commerce sometimes can be a little rough. You might need a helping hand. So what you got to do, you got to call out for the lifeguard to help you. And then when I decided to make a subscription-based group to take people even deeper, my uncle, who passed away from cancer, unfortunately, he was kind of like my third parent.
Okay.
Mom and dad were great parents, so anyone listening, don't think my parents are bad parents, but at 10 years old, he threw me on the back of his Harley.
Yeah, and I met your mom. Your mom's cool.
Yeah, my mom's
awesome. Yeah, she's fine.
I'm still with my dad, for that matter.
Yeah,
but at 10
I haven't
years,
met your dad.
At 10 years old, I got thrown on the back of a Harley, and we went to Charlie Daniels Band at the height of Went Down to Georgia.
Yeah,
Juice Newton Open, playing with the Queen of Hearts.
Juice Newton.
Angel of the Morning.
Oh, man. So, okay, let me guess. This was 1980?
Yes.
Okay.
And so here's 20,000 people. I've been to Sha-na-na and Donnie Marie up to that point as concerts.
Yeah.
At 10 years old.
I saw them too. I saw them in Vegas.
Nice. So my uncle became immediately my third parent. Like, because my folks, although enjoy music, my uncle enjoyed music.
Right.
And we'd get into it deep with music and we'd go to concerts. And then we would travel together and go to Hawaii together and Key West. And he's my godfather also. And we did a lot of drinking together, did some drugs together. There was a new concert venue in Cleveland, and we were there opening night, and we were the first ones to get stoned in the bathroom.
Wow.
So I have that awesome memory. But a few years back, he got diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and was given 6 months to 2 years to live, and he only lasted 6 weeks.
Oh.
Now, not to bring it down, but one of his favorite places was South Shore of Maui, the Secret Cove area. It's a little secret beach. You ever been there?
No, I haven't. I haven't been to Maui yet.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I know.
You have been to the farthest remote places of the Polynesian corner, and you haven't been to Maui? You go down South Shore, and when you go, I'll tell you. Well, there's this little opening in this brick wall in this neighborhood of nice houses.
Oh.
And there's this little secret cove. It's called Secret Cove or Secret Beach.
So it's really called Secret Beach.
Yeah. And so he took me there. Or actually, he sent me there, and then we've been there together. And then as we knew he was passing, he said, can you do me a favor and take part of my ashes there? I said, absolutely. And so I was there. I took his ashes there like he asked. And then my wife and I were there, and I'm like, I'm going to name my group kind of in memory of him.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And right now, when my parents are listening to this, they're both crying right now. Sorry, Mom and Dad. But it's such a special place. So I went down there in December with my wife. And we went and talked to my uncle and had a rum and coke with him. And then we played football on the beach, Stacy and I, like we used to do with my uncle. And it means a lot to me, that place and him. And so he is part of who I am. And so that's why I made the Secret Beach, because it's a secret. So you get it.
Yeah.
But it's also an important part of my life. And so a lot of people who follow me They're working hard. And sometimes they forget to have fun, too. So besides the fact I'm teaching them how to make money, this week they're all getting homework. I'm going to make them all go out and have some fun. And fun might be just taking your dog for a walk around the block.
Yeah.
Or turn your phone off and watch a movie at home or going to the movies. Now, I have fun every week. You see me on Facebook. I'm at this concert, that concert, you know.
Right.
I live in fun cities, Las Vegas. But I want people, besides enriching their business, to enrich their lives. And some people said, you know, I keep forgetting to have fun.
This episode is sponsored in part by Steadfast Pomade. Steadfast Pomade is a strong-holding, medium-bodied, water-based styling product for men and women, which leaves your hair looking slick, neat, and shiny with a clean, fresh scent. Its unique formula allows you to easily restyle your hair throughout the day and washes out with ease. Steadfast Pomade is American-made and veteran-owned. Available in original and anchor hold, get yours today at steadfastpomade.com. Tame the waves and keep it steadfast. This episode is also sponsored in part by Big Toe Art. With over 20 years in the Southern California surfing and apparel industry, Big Toe fuses tiki, surf, and custom culture imagery to create one-of-a-kind paintings, jewelry, mugs, and more. To see his amazing work or pick up a cool mug, painting, or print, find him on Facebook or Instagram at Big Toe Art or visit his website at bigtoeart.com.
So, Seeker Beach and your thrifting group, you do this full time.
Yep.
Did you ever see yourself doing this full time?
No, you know, my mom took me to flea markets when I was six, and back in 1977, you know, flea markets were just boring antiques. We lived in outside of Cleveland, in the country, so it was all country crap.
Okay.
Even back then, I would assume back then there was no cool, like, mid-century modern stuff. It was all, like, 100-year-old stuff, actual antiques, jugs and, you know.
Milk. Right.
But I was fascinated by people selling stuff at six. I wandered away from my mom and my grandmother. They freaked out, but they found me talking to a vendor. I didn't like kids even back when I was a kid. I talked to adults all the time, from six on. I was just fascinated. I'm like, why are you selling this? So at 10, I got taken to a community sale in a neighboring town in front of the high school.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone set up a table in front of the high school, and I had one job. And by the time I was 10, I had two jobs. I was a dual income 12-year-old. I had two jobs when I was 12.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
So I had my first job when I was 10 plus a little allowance, and I had to save $40. And I realized, I was pulling a little wagon around, I could buy about four times as many toys and games used that I could new. And I'm like, I'd rather have more stuff than new stuff.
Right. Right.
You know, what kid wouldn't?
Right.
So I was hooked from that point in terms of doing it, but never thought it would be a job, a career, lead me to having my own TV show, lead me to leading 29,000 people to, you know, and not everyone in my group is trying to get out of poverty. Some people are like, oh man, I can make some extra money and just go on vacation and then never even feel the bump in my normal, you know, life.
Yeah.
So, that was not the...
So it started back then.
Oh, yeah. The enjoyment of it started way back then, yeah.
But, I mean, like, before you were doing this full time, you were selling hot tubs, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, I've done a lot. Like, my first career, I wasn't even married yet to Stacy, and my mom worked for Varsity Spirit Fashions.
Okay.
The biggest cheerleading manufacturer of uniforms in the world. And so here I am, early 20s, and my job is sizing cheerleaders for their uniforms. So the actual job was I would look how big the bust of a girl was and then turn her sideways to see how the curve of her butt, how big it was, and then go, here, try this on. Now, you're having the same thought all my guy friends do. Oh, my God, that's like the ideal job. Here's the thing. Mostly, it was 13-year-olds who hadn't discovered the subtleties of deodorant yet.
Yeah.
Okay. The only time it was somewhat enjoyable, because it'd be creepy if it was enjoyable, Andre, pro teams and college teams.
Yeah. I was going to say, if you're in your early 20s and you're sizing a 13-year-old cheerleader, that's not good.
I was very professional.
Right.
I didn't have to really touch them because I got so good at it. I would just look at a woman and go, okay, this size and this size. And it became a fun bar trick.
Yeah.
My guy friends are like, you're amazing. So we go to a bar. And like, because, you know, guys don't know girl sizes.
Right.
You don't know. You don't know sizes.
No.
And so they'd bring girls over and like, he knows your size. Bullshit. And then I would tell him. I'd always be on at least, if not dead on, within one size.
I love how you turned it into a bar trick.
Oh, it was great.
And did you get drinks for that? Did you say like if I get your dress size?
I didn't start as a bar trick. It was my guy friends were like, this could be good. This could be bringing girls
over. If I guess your size, you have to buy me a beer or something like that, right?
I never went that far because I met Stacy when I was 19. So I've been with Stace for a long, long time. 27 years. What up, Stace? 27 years in August. But what? I'll be a good wingman.
Yeah.
So the guys then could talk to girls because every girl was amazed a dude knew their size. That was my job.
Yeah.
That was my job. So when I size girls, I mean, probably the first year I actually had to do the tape measure kind of thing. And then because I was a dude, I would measure, I would have it come together underneath the arm instead of across the chest. But once I got going, just visually, I could look at a girl and go, here you go, try this on, just make sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you did high school, middle school, if they wore a size like, say, 38 top, they pretty much either bought 38 or even a 40. You go to college and pro, if they wore a 38 top, they'd get a 32.
I was going
to
say, they want to accentuate it, yeah.
So that was the rare times it was somewhat enjoyable, but it was a career. So mom gave me that career, so selling those. And then I got out of that and I got in the music business, so to speak. I worked for a huge chain of CD stores in Cleveland that went actually from Detroit, Cleveland, and Pittsburgh. And I worked for them for a while and I got laid off and I was kind of miserable. And it was going into summertime and I was getting 6 months of unemployment and Stacy didn't bust my chops to get a job,
mm-hmm.
which I'm sure you can relate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I golfed all summer. I got a dog for us. You know, I enjoyed my summer, but fall was coming quick and I'm like, I got to go find a job. She got a job offer to go to Long Beach. I said, someone's going to pay for us to leave Cleveland before my 30th winter. Goodbye.
Right.
Winters in Cleveland blow.
So you've been wanting to leave Cleveland.
I hadn't really been wanting to. And actually, the job I had, I thought it'd be my job the rest of my life. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I loved working in music. So we get to Long Beach, and Stacy had already found me a job at a record store on Fingerprints on 2nd Street in Belmont Shore. So I worked there for a while, and then I transitioned over to Tower and ended up working at Tower Records on Sunset. I was the night manager back in the days when there wasn't downloading, there wasn't sharing, there wasn't streaming. So if you wanted to buy music and you were a celebrity, guess what? You got to come to the store.
That's where you went.
So every day I helped a different celebrity at work. And so that was quite fun. So I sold CDs forever.
When, what years was that?
So we moved to Long Beach in September of 2000.
Okay.
And
so it was later
on. So 2000, by 2002 or three, I was at Tower in Westwood first, UCLA Tower.
Okay.
And then I moved to Sunset Strip. And, you know, it was quite fun. If I would have been a little bit younger, maybe single, because I worked night. And then as soon as we closed, all the younger kids would go off on the Sunset Strip and party all night. And I'm like,
right.
I've been at this since 4 o'clock. My wife has banker's hours. So I never saw her because I worked second shift.
Right.
But it was fun. You know, one day, Redman the rapper is standing in line behind Paul Stanley from Kiss waiting to ring out. I mean,
that's pretty cool.
That was my daily. Like, I helped Kathy Bates pick out music. I helped Meg Ryan pick out soundtracks. I helped B.B. King pick out box sets. Don Henley. I mean, the list was endless, but it was fun.
Yeah.
Because it's a fun job. Like, if they were picking out tiling for their floor or carpeting, that ain't fun.
I know a guy who worked at Tower Records, not at the cool one on Sunset. He worked at the Tower Records in Brea.
Okay.
But he knew everything about music. I mean, he was a musical encyclopedia, which I guess you have to be if you're working in Tower Records.
Yeah, I remember when I first started at Tower on Sunset, UCLA, Westwood. I was like, we have a lot of wrong things here, because I'm a music nerd, too.
Yeah.
Like, this is not a country singer. This is a gospel singer. Why the hell is it in country? So I went through the whole store and cleaned it. Like, no one told me to. And my buddy was a head manager, so I came in as management. I mean, I wasn't, you know, I was already 30, you know, established. I wasn't coming in as some young kid, you know, stocking shelves. But as I'm walking around the store, I'm like, there's a lot of shit wrong here.
Yeah.
And so I fixed it. Like, when I go shopping nowadays, I find myself straightening up the bin still. That's a long time ago. So I sold CDs.
Did you do that when you went to Amoeba?
All the time.
Because I saw that. What was it? You were there about a month ago, right?
Been a couple months now.
Has it been a couple months? Because I know that you did a little video on that a tutorial, for lack of a better term, where you were showing people, okay, this is what you want to look for, and you found like some Christmas CDs and things like that. And, you know, like whenever I walk into Amoeba, and I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, quite right.
God, it just reminds me of the days when I used to hang out at a record store on a Friday night. That's like something that I had my kids with me, and I thought, you guys, this is something that is like a rite of passage, right? When you're a young adult, hanging out in a record store for hours on a Friday night and going through all the bins and looking for obscure things, and that's all going away, you know? Like with Amoeba, that's the only experience. Well, that's the only place left where you can have that experience.
The good thing is it's really back. I mean, the vinyl, I was talking to a couple guys the other day, and they're like, I heard one guy's like, and he wasn't old, he was actually younger than me. He said, I heard vinyl's having a resurgence. I go, you're so far behind, cassettes are having a resurgence.
Right.
Artists are actually releasing stuff on cassette right now, and I sell a lot of used cassettes on eBay. And so vinyl is still having the resurgence, but we're back. Now we're down to cassettes. Maybe 8-tracks and reel-to-reels are next. I don't know, but everything old is new again, bro.
And I thought 8-tracks already started having the resurgence because I know people who are buying 8-tracks.
Yeah.
That they're actually looking for like all the old rock bands on 8-track.
One of my peeps just sold, one of the surfers in the thrifting board just sold an 8-track for $50.
Yeah.
It was a good classic rock one. Now, if you're listening to this, don't go out and buy every 8-track you see. Sing Along with Mitch Miller is not worth the time. But but if you find The Doors, you find Zeppelin, find Kiss.
That's what they look for. They look for all the old rock bands on 8-track. Yeah.
Let me tell you, the sound on 8-track is not good.
No.
You know, in the middle of Firehouse on Double Platinum by Kiss, the track changes. So Firehouse fades out halfway through the song. It clicks to the next track. It fades back in. It's not an ideal way to listen to music, but you know, maybe it's hipsters, people who love retro stuff or vintage stuff.
It's having something that's old, I think. A lot of it has
Which is fine, because I'm always on top of what's old and is new again, is hot. And then I start looking. Like, I was in a record store about 5 years ago in Boston, the one I like called Cheapo. Actually, when I filmed that on my TV show. And they had a reel-to-reel of Cream.
Okay.
And Cream. And they had it for $30, and I knew it was worth about $100.
Yeah.
So I bought it, and the kid rang me out, goes, "You're buying a reel-to-reel for $30? I go, "You're selling it. You want to sell it to me for less? I'll happily pay you less." He goes, no.
Have you ever offered less for something like that? Have you ever said, you know what? I want this, but I don't want to pay $30 for it. Will you give it to me for $20?
You know, I wouldn't do it in Amoeba. I mean, that's a monolith.
Well, not Amoeba, but like you went to this like independent little hole in the wall, right? And the kid's laughing at you for paying that.
Not on a single item. Like, I'll wheel and deal at places and on things. But if I'm buying a shit ton of stuff, I might say, a little break. And then places that I frequent a lot, whether it be buying stuff or even bars, the more you frequent a place, the more you are known there. And the nicer you are, and if it's a tipping situation, the better you tip, the better the service is. I mean,
oh yeah,
that seems stupid to say, but people don't get it.
No, I mean, like, they don't get it. But I'm like, if you go on vacation and you know you're going to be at this hotel for a week and you're probably going to be drinking at the bar at the end of every day, you leave a big tip the first day you're there.
Hell yeah.
And every time you walk in for the rest of your vacation, you get better service.
You ever been to a Drink in Boston?
I have not.
Have you heard of it?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so Drink was kind of on the forefront of the whole cocktail resurgence mixologist place. We're going to make blocks of ice and crack little chunks off. You know, that was one of those places. And so when Stacy and I travel, I usually don't repeat bars when I'm in major cities. Like, if I'm in a little resort, different story. But Boston, New York, Portland, you know, every night's a new adventure. And so Drink was on our way home, so we stopped there the first night. And it wasn't not Tiki Bar, but they had all Jeff Beach Bum's books, and so they can make. They knew a lot. They could make a lot, and so it was phenomenal. And so we tipped well the first night,
yeah.
And we went 5 nights in a row or 4 nights in a row. And the last night was going to be Saturday, and they told us on Friday, like, "Look, Saturdays are packed. As soon as we see you, we'll get you in."
Nice.
And so they were underground, and you could see the sidewalk from the bar.
Okay.
They saw us coming, and there was a restaurant on the floor above. The door girl came out and got us, drug us through the kitchen of the restaurant, down the back stairs, and had two seats for us at the bar.
Nice, because you tipped them good.
I took care of them all week. I took care of the girl that sat. I took care of the bartender. I took care of them all well. Plus, when you talk, if you're not the just douche,
right.
"Oh my God, can I have a vanilla Pepsi and vodka?"
Right.
Because, look, if you don't know what I look like, I'm sure Adrian will put a picture up. I am not a pretty girl. I have no cleavage, and I get...
Although you sound like one.
Yeah. I get free drinks at bars all over the country, Adrian. And here's why. Because I have conversations with the bartenders, with the mixologists, and we talk rum, we talk cocktails, and I tip well, and all those things. I always get a free drink.
Yeah.
And I was telling a friend about that, and she's a cute girl. And we were just in Atlanta together, and she was like, "Yeah, whatever." And we were at this cool bar that had great food, and it wasn't a tiki bar, but they do Tiki Tuesdays, which I know you don't like.
Well, I have mixed feelings about it, but, you know, I like Tiki Tuesdays in a tiki bar. I kind of, it feels exploitive to me if they're not a tiki bar and they're doing Tiki Tuesdays. So.
And I get what you're saying, but it wasn't Tuesday. And
yeah.
I said, we ate dinner at a table, and we had a great cocktail, great, great rum cocktail. And so I said to the guy, I said, "I'm going to check out because I want to sit at the bar and look at the booze and talk booze." And cute girl covered in tats, a bunch of Sailor Jerry tattoos. And by the end, she's in charge of me for the last round. I looked at my female friend, who is cute with boobs, and I go, "See?
Wow.
I've never asked for a free drink.
You don't ask for it, and you don't expect it.
No, I don't expect either.
You just treat them
they
respectfully,
really enjoy,
and they, and right. Go ahead.
They enjoy the customers who want to talk about the craft and the booze, and not just. Now, look, you've been to Smuggler's Cove, right?
Yeah.
Many times, right?
Yeah, well, a few times.
So I'm sitting there one night.
It's not exactly
now,
next
you've
door.
You've never been
but...
to Smuggler's Cove. There's no sign. There's two little lights.
Right.
You got to know where you're going. And it's all rum. I mean, I think Martin's had like 540 rums or something, give or take. And I'm sitting at the bar, and Steve is one of my, to me, is my main bartender there. I love
Steve is great.
Steve is phenomenal.
Steve and Lyle. Shout out to Steve Lyle.
Big shout out. I love Steve. So we're sitting there one night, and a girl plops. I'm by myself. I have no friends, no family with me, no wife. Just by myself. I was working up there. Girl plops down. She goes, "Oh my God, I heard about this new cocktail. Can you make it?" And Steve's like, "Yeah, sure. What is it?" And she goes, "It's vanilla Pepsi and vodka." And you know what the bartender wants to say? And I look at her and say it for him. I go, "This is a fucking rum bar." She goes, "It is?" I go, "Okay, now I got to ask. How the hell did you get here? There's no sign."
She's like, "No, you're right, huh?"
Yeah.
So, like, there's no sign, and how did you find this place?
She goes, "My friends told me to meet me here." I go, "They didn't mention it was a rum bar with over 500 rums." She goes, "Oh, I love rum."
Oh my God!
I'm just like,
and then not only that is it's in a she's in a bar where they take pride in serving you a master crafted cocktail.
Yeah.
And she's ordering basically a Coke and vodka.
No, not even Coke. Specifically, it was
vanilla
Pepsi.
Coke.
No.
Oh, vanilla Pepsi.
No, vanilla vodka and Pepsi.
Oh, vanilla vodka.
Oh, yeah.
That's even worse.
Worse.
That's even worse.
But I'm always the guy that, even like if I'm in the post office, if someone's being an asshole, what the people behind the counter want to say, I'll always say it.
Yeah.
I'll always say it. And I've been handed notes while I was at the post office back in the days when you used to have to go instead of getting pickups. I got a note once because I was setting someone straight in line.
Yeah.
A note from the person behind the counter, the postal worker, and it said, "You're our hero."
Oh, that's awesome.
Because I said the stuff that they can't really say. They should be able
to. They can't.
When people are being just complete assholes. But I'm also the guy that'll hold the door for every woman coming out of my Weight Watchers meeting. You know, people think I'm an asshole. I am a nice guy.
Yeah.
But if you're a dick.
I think that. And I'm just going to say this. I think that you're misunderstood. Because I think you're brash.
Very.
But I also don't think that people understand that it doesn't come from a malicious perspective.
If we're friends, I will absolutely take a bullet for it.
Oh, completely. I agree with that, yes.
You screw me, though. I will chew your leg off.
Yeah.
I won't kill you. I want to make you hobble the rest of your life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm a big dude. I can take care of everybody. Like, when we go to concerts or anywhere where I'm with a group, because I'm 6'5", I always keep an eye on everybody. I am rarely ever drunk in my entire life. I enjoy cocktails, but I feel it's my duty to keep an eye on my short friends.
Yeah.
And make
Thanks
sure
for pointing at me.
To make sure that nothing goes wrong. Because, no offense, but you're not gonna protect the whole crowd.
No, I get it.
You know, my wingspan can kind of reach out and protect the crowd.
I keep telling Steph because she goes to Vegas with her girlfriends, and they do. I know.
Is this the podcast where I'm like,
I know,
I drove all the way to your wedding, and your wife can't even call me when she's 5 minutes from
my house? We're gonna call her out on that. So, she goes out there with her girlfriends, and they usually go see like a Bruno Mars concert or something, right? And I know that you've said a couple times, "Hey, you know." They need protection. They need a guy like me to walk them around and make sure that these douchebags don't get hit on them all night long.
Oh, my God. Vegas is so douchey. I mean, if you know the ins and outs, there's parts that aren't. But
yeah.
Remember when the Hangover came out?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Vegas was douchey, and then the movie The Hangover comes out, and every dude from L.A. wanted to live that weekend.
It's worse now. So they're all doing Hangover weekends.
So we're sitting at the bar at Cabo Wabo, the outdoor bar, on a Saturday night. Now, why Stacey and I thought we should go to Cabo Wabo on a Saturday night, and it was like spring or summertime.
That used to be Trader Vic's, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Much better as Cabo Wabo.
That's saying something.
Oh. And Ryan, the bartender, this was our first time meeting, but we ended up hanging out and drinking with him a few times, but after talking for a couple minutes, he goes, "You two aren't tourists, are you?" I go, "No, we live in Henderson." And he goes, "The hell are you doing here on a Saturday night?" And I said, "I don't know. We don't have a concert or anything else. Like, we just decided to go to Cabo Wabo and drink tequila." I'm like, "I don't know why. We could do it on That's Tuesday funny. When it's quieter." But anyway, I never turned around and looked at him, but four dudes behind us get there, and it's like 7 p.m. Like, "Whoa, Vegas!" Yeah.
The girls are worse too, right?
Oh, yeah. But they're like,
because that's Steph. Steph's like that. There's just four of them. There's four of them doing that.
Oh, she do this. Well, no, she doesn't do this. Next part about Vegas, she don't drink. These dudes were like, "Dude, we want four shots of Crown Royal." And I'm like, so they can't see me, but I'm rolling my eyes hard. And I can see Ryan, the bartender, smirking a little bit. So he gets the crown out. And I hear a little discussion behind my head. So as he's about to pour the crown, "Okay, wait. Three crowns, one Southern Comfort." And I'm like, "Oh, pussy." A little more discussion. "Can you make that two crowns, two Southern Comfort?" I'm like, so
now
Ryan,
at this point, you probably want to turn around. You want to say something.
Oh, I do. I just want to, like, seriously, boys, if you're going to do it. So he poured two crowns, two Southerns, and handed them back. And then I'm like, "This is a great weekend in Vegas." And three dudes did their shot. And I'm not sure if it was a crown shot or a Southern Comfort shot, but it came back past me. And the guy said, "Can you put a little Coke in here, please?" And I looked at Ryan and I went, "I could never work on the Strip. I would want to kill everybody.
They're you
such
know what?
Idiots.
I don't even...
But hey, come to my city. That's why I live there.
I don't even hang out on the Strip myself. I mean, I go down there. It's funny is, you know, we'll post our Facebook pictures and stuff. And Stephanie and I always comment that our Vegas pictures don't look the same. Like her Vegas pictures, they're all at the Cosmo or the Aria or, like, you know, some hoity-toity, like, you know, fancy place with fake crystal chandeliers and that kind of stuff. And I'm in some kind of dive bar, you know.
See, I'm the same way. But, you know, I heard on, I think it was a podcast I listened to today, the one with Mo and Linda.
Yeah, Mo and Linda.
Or maybe the one right before. But you were like, "I go to these places, I want to do the tourist stuff." But see, I want to do both. When I go anywhere, I want to do the tourist stuff, and I want to get off the beaten path all the same day.
I don't deny that I'm a tourist when I go to a town that I'm not a local at. I do enjoy going and seeing the sights. But Vegas is one of those things that I just avoid the Strip because, just like everything you said, everybody there annoys me. The traffic annoys me. That's enough for me. I don't even want to be down there because of the traffic.
If you know every back door like I do, I can instruct you into the back doors and the places, and then you don't have to worry about the traffic at all.
Okay.
Like, here's the greatest thing. People go, "Why do you live in Vegas?" Here's the greatest reason to live in Vegas. It's a major city with all the major city attributes. Greatest dining. Greatest entertainment. Now, when I first moved
But that's
there,
all on the Strip, right?
Right. But when I first moved there, concerts were, for whatever reason, would pass Vegas. You'd see a band play Phoenix in L.A.
But they'd never go to Vegas.
And luckily, some rocker at one point went, "Wait a minute, why are we skipping the city that's open all night?"
Yeah.
And now everyone comes here.
I was going to say, that doesn't sound like the Vegas that I know.
But what's nice about Vegas, as opposed to Cleveland, as opposed to L.A., where I've lived, as opposed to Boston, Portland, everything important is in a straight line, mm-hmm. 5 miles long, mm-hmm. with little tiny offshoots.
Right.
That's it. If you're doing stuff in L.A., you might have to drive to San Fernando Valley. You might have to drive to Hollywood. You might have to drive to Long Beach. That's all L.A.
Right.
All my shit is in one straight line.
Right.
5 miles long. And so once you know all the back doors, it's a great city because we get all the big city attributes. And then other than the actual rush hour, there's no traffic.
Yeah.
Now, if you talk to somebody who's lived there their whole life, they think it's a lot of traffic. I have lived in L.A. I have worked and filmed in Boston and all these other cities. They're like, nightmares.
Well, see, I obviously don't know all the back entrances that you know. So when
secret
I'm on
valets,
the
Strip,
I don't know all that. So when I'm on the Strip, it's frustrating. It's frustrating just being stuck at an intersection. Thank God they have pedestrian bridges now, because before that, it was a mess.
It was a nightmare. You know, I love, like you, I love old stuff. I love history.
Yeah.
I love old stuff. But this is going to be very weird coming from someone who collects, you know, 60-year-old ceramic mugs. I like living in Vegas because it's new every 7 years. So I go home to Cleveland. My same friend who I graduated with is still working at the same bank.
Wow.
And to them, that's fine.
Yeah.
No one ever leaves my little town. And, you know, I drive down places now in Vegas. I've been there for 12, 13 years. And I'm like, okay, that road didn't exist 7 years ago.
Yeah.
That's new. So although they tear down the old, and I appreciate the old, and I do miss it, I do like the fact that where I'm living, it's new all the time. Because it keeps it fresh.
That block where Cosmopolitan and Aria's on, that is not the Vegas that I know.
Oh, I mean,
like, if you look at that block, it's all glass towers now.
Yeah.
That's the new trend, right? It's all the high-end stuff now, right? All the theme stuff. Well,
and two things happened there that were kind of odd. First, Cosmopolitan was supposed to be condos. That's why there is balconies.
Right.
Because their theory was if we let the windows open in Vegas, people would jump out and kill themselves all the time.
Right.
Which I haven't heard of too many any suicides at the Cosmopolitan, and there's balconies everywhere. So maybe going in the future, there'll be more balconies. Because it's pretty nice to be able to walk out on a balcony with a cocktail, look down the strip, all the lights.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive, but most you can't. And then at City Center, which was the biggest square footage project as one project ever in the United States, because there were so many buildings, all very tall. But the front one, which was called the Harmon Tower, which is no longer there, about halfway to the 40th floor, so they were at like floor 20, somehow they realized they were using the wrong rebar.
Oh, wow.
And so the inspector went, wait, we've been using this rebar the whole time? This is for a building that's like six stories tall or something. You know, it was like not
a 40.
And so the MGM Mirage sued the contractor sued the subcontractor sued the rebar guy, and the city said, you can't use this building. They did cap it at 20, and they finished it off. They felt it was going to be safe, and they still had their own Independence Day, seeing it was going to be safe. And the city said no, so they had to destroy a glass building in the middle of a property that wasn't being demolished. So they had to take it down piece by piece. Usually, like, gone, done.
Wow.
So it's a crazy city, dude. It is an absolute crazy city to live in, because that kind of shit happens.
Let me ask you this. So they have, like, all these reality TV places out there, right? They've got the ATM guys who do the fish tanks, the tank guys.
Tank.
And then you've got Counts Customs, and then you've got American Restoration, and then you've got Chopper, who's at Tobin Dodge. He was King of Cars.
Yep.
And what else am I missing? Pawn Stars. That's another one.
And
Thrift Hunters?
Well, I was going to say, and they're all bullshit except Thrift Hunters.
Oh, they're all bullshit.
Oh, they're all bullshit.
Okay, so I want to talk about that. So let's start with, why are they all in Vegas? Is there a production company that's
selling? No, because they're all by different people. I mean, my production company was out of...
Is it just because it's Vegas, so it's more interesting, or...
Probably, I don't know. You know, it's one of those things that just kind of happened, like perfect storm kind of thing, I would assume.
Well, I know the Pawn Stars guy got started because Dave Attell went there on one of his shows.
Well, here's what I will say. So, look, if you don't want to have any secrets ruined, if you want to believe all those shows are real, you should probably pause this podcast for a few minutes, because I'm going to ruin it all.
Well, I can tell you right now, like on Pawn Stars, in the early seasons, there would be nobody in the pawn shop.
Because they closed it.
Yeah, when they would be doing these appraisals.
They would allow...
And that looked so fake to me.
So here's what I will say. They did... Rick and his store always got unique stuff. That's why they got the show. I was in there one day pre-show. Okay, mm-hmm. I used to source there because they used to have CDs. They used to have typical pawn shop stuff besides weird stuff. And so one day I'm in there and I'm looking through the CDs, and one employee answers the phone and he goes, "Okay, hold on a second," puts him on hold. "Oh shit, sorry, Rick. This lady called yesterday. She wants to sell a Heisman Trophy." Who the hell has a Heisman Trophy just to sell to a pawn shop?
Right.
And I was like, "Wow." So he got on the phone with her and talked about it. And I'm like, and then they got the show. So they always got unique stuff, but it quickly turned into, we're going to grab this employee out of the back room, and they're going to pretend they're bringing this in. Because my friend did internet stuff.
Oh, you're kidding me.
And at one point, they're like, "Okay, see this Denny Dent painting? You found it at an estate sale. We're going to settle on $5,000. You got to haggle with me a little bit. Okay, go."
Yeah.
So she came out of the back room, walked outside, wheeled this Denny Dent painting in, and haggled.
And this is a friend of yours.
Yeah. I didn't realize she was going to be on, and I wasn't actually watching the TV when it was on, but I heard her voice, and I went... What? And then Rick's Restoration is all fake because the people who bring their stuff in, and you can't see this, but I am doing air quotes on a podcast, who bring their stuff in, it ain't their stuff. It's his. I see his son buying it at auctions all over town. And then they have Beth and Dave, a newlywed couple, bringing in this childhood memory. No bullshit. Your son bought it for 30 bucks at the same auction I was at last week.
Yeah. What about the tanked guys?
I don't know much about them, and they've done some tanks for people I know, not actual friends, but just friends of friends.
Yeah.
And so they do the work, and I enjoy their end product, but I don't know enough to even, I would never call them out, like I've just called out the two Ricks.
Yeah. Well, I went to all those shops. I went to Counts Customs.
Oh, you tourist.
I know. And I spent the whole day doing that once and walked through the car museum. That was at Counts Customs. That was pretty cool. It was cool to see those
cars. You know, I haven't done that, and I would do that because he's got cool cars. I do hang out at Counts Bar all the time, Vamped.
I haven't been to the bar yet.
A lot of cool bands play there, 80s bands and stuff.
Right,
so.
Right. And I heard it's a popular bar. I haven't been there yet, though. But I mean, like, I got to walk around. It didn't cost me anything to walk through and look at the cars. That was kind of cool. And then went to the Acrylic Tank Manufacturing. They have it set up to where you can watch them build their tanks. There's like a
viewing area.
Yeah, like a chain link fence. So you could stand behind this chain link fence and watch them. But I went on a Sunday when everybody was off. So, but you know, they still have a shop there where you can buy T-shirts and stuff like that.
I want to get to the hookers when they're fresh on Monday, not when they're beat on Sunday. Come on now.
And then I went to the pawn shop, right? The Pawn Stars,
Gold and Silver Pawn.
And there was a line when we pulled up, but you know, it's they have a lot of things in there that you see in the show, and they actually pointed out the one that was the worst was Rick's Restorations, where they had they had signs everywhere that said, oh, this is what, you know, Rick, if you saw the episode where he proposed to his girlfriend. Yeah, and see, then
that's,
you know,
the real problem I had with that show was her.
They do tours.
She was the Yoko Ono of the reality shows.
Yeah.
Because actually, when that show first started, whether the stuff was really that person's or not, they showed a lot more restoration. I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed seeing them get the dent out and resand it down and make it look like it's 7 years old. Next thing you know, the whole episode is based on the new girlfriend, if there's going to be a cookout for the whole team or not. I'm just like,
yeah,
the hell is this? I want to see the actual restoration. Now it's 30 seconds of restoration and the new girlfriend, soon to be wife, is running around. Are you going to eat hamburgers or vegan burgers? I'm like, I hate the show now.
Yeah.
I hate it. I like the restoration part.
Now, was Thrift Hunter supposed to be part of that whole Vegas thing?
Not really. We just happened to be living there, and our production company was out of Montreal, so just wherever we lived, it didn't matter.
How did they get that thing started? How did that whole thing...
So, this company wanted to do a thrifting show, because there was all kinds of pawn shop shows.
Right.
There was flea market flips, all these things, but there was no real show about actual thrifters going into the thrift stores, going to garage sales, and the whole like... And so, oddly enough, this ties back into my uncle when he passed. I'm home for the week of the funeral. And at the time, the guy I was partnered with in the show, we were friends. And he said, hey, I got a call from a production company that wants to make a TV show about us. And I'm like, bullshit, that doesn't happen. It's one of our friends pulling our legs. And he goes, no, I think it's real. He goes, I looked them up. They're legit. They're out of Montreal. It'd be weird for one of our friends to pick some weird, obscure production company out of Montreal.
Yeah.
And,
That's like Montreal. It's not even in the United States. It's like.
That's right. It's our friendly neighbor to the north, Canada.
But I mean, that's just what's so strange about it.
So, what the girl in charge of figuring out the people for our new show was doing was going to Google, going to YouTube, going to Facebook, and she was looking for thrifters, and my face kept popping up and videos and stuff. And, you know, so they reached out to us and they said, we'd like to make a show with you. And I said, okay. So I talked to the boss and I said, hey, because at the time, I think I was 42 when we first talked. I'm 46 now.
Did your game show background or anything like that help with this?
No, we can talk about the game shows. But when they called us and they said, let's do this, I talked to the boss. I said, at 42, do I have any interest in making bullshit fake TV like I see on TV?
No,
not at all. Do I want to be on TV and maybe famous? Absolutely. But if we're making fake TV, I'm actually going to pass. At 20, I would have taken anything.
Yeah.
At 42, I'm like, I had a nice life, but I thought it'd be fun. And he goes, well, I'm glad you said that, Jay, because we don't make fake TV. We make, I forget the word he used, but...
Authentic?
It wasn't even authentic. But he says, we're going to follow, because they're Canadian, we're going to follow the puck. So follow the puck is a hockey term. So we're going to start from, you know, basically heading out your door to go thrifting to selling it on eBay.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you saw the show... The things we were buying were things that were in that thrift store or that antique store or that garage sale. We, of course, had this. I mean, this is where people, conspiracy theorists online, like, it was fake. They knew you were coming. Yes, we didn't film guerrilla TV. We didn't just show up with a camera crew and hope. Yes, we had to find places, but we looked around. We would travel. We'd look around at what the best rated thrift stores on Yelp were.
Mm-hmm.
And then look at the pictures. Because if it was a tiny little thrift store, like, say, your room here, not enough room to work. Mm-hmm. If it was your whole house, there's room to work. So I would always be looking at pictures. But what you saw us buy was actually at the store. What we bought, the money we used came out of our own pocket. And then when we sold it on our eBay ID, which you could look up. And so when people kept crying bullshit, others who weren't even my friends are like, you know, you can just look it up.
You can just look it up, yeah.
You can see his solds, and you can see they're real solds.
Yeah.
And so our show was very real. Did we have to redo things from time to time? Yeah, because you walk out and a Harley drives by, and you've done the joke funny the first time.
Right.
And they're like, well, that was a good joke. Do that again. And so now you got to make it sound funny and natural the second.
Right.
Oh, then a plane flies overhead. And then the third, oh, someone cut in front of you. And then the fourth, and like in your head, you're going, does this still sound funny?
Yeah.
Is it going to sound funny to the audience?
Yeah.
Because now,
yeah,
saying a joke four times in a row doesn't sound so funny. You know, we saw Aerosmith in concert once, and they had to film a commercial for NASCAR. So they played the song once, and then they played the same song twice because they had to cut different angles. It was very weird to hear a concert in concert of the same song, because by halfway through the second time, you're like, this sucks.
Yeah, yeah. Now you know how those guys feel. They got to play it every night.
Yeah. So yeah. So very real show. You know, there was some pre-staging. Like when we did thrift stores, we'd always just go in and start finding stuff. But antique stores, antique malls, certain booths have nothing we would ever buy.
Right.
Like if it's a booth of quilts, I never buy a quilt. So what we would do is we'd spend an hour wandering the antique store while they did the extra little shots of the corners of the pretty stuff.
Looking for the booths that would be interesting.
Yeah, so then at the end of that hour, okay, I want to shop in booth 13, 27, 52, 49, and 17 for sure. And that way we knew there were things in those booths, but I would, without a camera crew, I would still do the same thing. I would walk the whole mall and find the booths I need to shop in to buy the things I need to buy to flip.
When you went to different states, was it, I mean, how did you choose which states to go to? Like, if you were going to go to, I don't know, name one of the states that you went to for that show.
So we were in Boston for two episodes.
Boston?
Yeah, we were in, which isn't a state. I fully know that's not a state. It is Massachusetts. In case anybody's like,
what?
He's drunk.
What made you pick Boston? Or did what made the show pick Boston?
Brian was from the Boston area.
So you just knew, okay, we're going to go to Boston.
Yeah, and we did two episodes in Cleveland from where I'm from. We did an episode in Pittsburgh because Pittsburgh's 2 hours from Cleveland. So we did Pittsburgh first, then drove to Cleveland, did two episodes in Cleveland. None of us had ever been to Portland, and we wanted to go, all of us wanted to go to Portland, so we picked Portland.
Okay.
Portland's got a great thrifting vintage scene, so.
Right.
But I did, like I said, I did a lot of looking online of pictures on Yelp, on Google, and Facebook of the stores, and I could get a good feel if this would be, like, there was this great little store. Now, this was one of the rare times little worked. It was called Smut. something used treasures is what the breakdown was. And unfortunately, she closed it up not too long ago. I can't remember her name, but she was a great store owner. And in a tiny space, she packed a lot of cool stuff. And only had, like, I bought A-Tracks there. Speaking of A-Tracks, Brian bought a bunch of movie posters. So we got to discover new places, too, besides going back to our old stomping grounds.
Now, what was probably the most unique or the best find you had when you were doing that?
Well, definitely the one I talk about the most that people are tired of hearing about, but it's still one of the most amazing finds.
And not just on the show, but also, let's talk about that.
Okay.
What's on the show, and then in just what you do every day.
Well, I'll back up. My first greatest CD purchase, because for the first 7 years of selling online, I only sold music and media. CDs, records, cassettes, VHS tapes, DVDs, only media, really. I didn't sell anything else. So I was at Second Spin in Santa Monica on Wilshire, which doesn't exist anymore. And they had a very rare version of the Woodstock soundtrack on CD. It was made by a company called Mobile Fidelity Sound Labs that made these high-end audiophile CDs. They started them on thicker CDs, and then they actually went to gold-plated.
Oh, interesting.
Audiophiles, people who enjoy music to a degree that you and I will never even care for.
Right.
Feel the gold-plated makes it sound better.
Yeah, that's why they also use the gold-plated cables, right?
Yeah, exactly.
RCA cables that have the gold-plated tips on them.
So this was a rare version because there's two, Woodstock 1 and 2, mm-hmm. two different soundtracks. This was both of them on one Mobile Fidelity Sound Lab, and the young kids that were working the store thought it was a regular version of just part one.
Mm-hmm.
They priced it at $14.99. I didn't know what it was really worth, but I knew it was worth well more than $14.99. So I snagged it, and I threw it up on eBay at auction, and a week later, it ended at $402.
That's awesome.
But the best part, the guy who won lived 2 miles from Second Spin in Wilshire.
Wow! Did he know that's where you found it?
No, hell no.
Okay.
No, but I picked it up for $15. He could have picked it up for $15. I sold it for $402.
Yeah.
So that was my first amazing CD sale. I've had about four or five sell in the $400 range, and I've had two sell in the $500 range.
Yeah.
One, I bought a box of CD soundtracks from a police auction, online police auction, confiscated stuff.
Yeah.
And in this box, and when they would do these police auction lots, they would only say, like, tiki mugs, and they would show you six, but there'd be 40 in there, you know?
Right.
So they showed a handful of soundtracks, and one of the ones, and they were all, it was the most amazing collection ever. The rarest of rare soundtracks. And one of them was the show Space 1999, which was out in the 60s. The soundtrack was released commercially, but the composer changed the music a smidge each season. And there was only a few seasons long. But his wife, after he died, allowed this little company to put out like this limited release of each other season, like 1,000 total. Super duper rare. I had no clue how rare it was. I threw it up, and that one ended up at $514.
Wow.
I paid $2 for it.
Wow. Okay, so what about on the show?
So on the show was, do you remember the movie Rad from the 80s?
Yeah.
BMX movie?
Yeah.
Now, if you're young...
No, so that was real. I saw that on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, I know that you said that there's no bullshit on the show, but...
So if you're not a child of the 80s, you'll not know this movie, but... So Karate Kid comes out in 84.
Mm-hmm.
And then every other sport had to have a movie like that, where there was the poor kid from the wrong side of the tracks.
Right.
Who ends up beating the rich kid who drives a Corvette, daddy's Corvette.
Right.
So Rad was the same way. The kid that was the best BMXer lived poor, had his ratty old bike, and then there was these rich kids whose daddy bought him all the best bikes. And so he ends up, of course, winning, and Lori Loughlin's in it from Full House, a couple other people. It's a horrible movie nowadays.
Uh-huh.
But when we were teenagers, I loved all those movies, you know, triumphing from the poor side of the tracks.
Right.
So, but here was the thing about Rad. It never came out on DVD. They only made it to VHS. The soundtrack never got past LP and cassette because it was really a failure. But it started to grow this cult following, unlike any other cult following of any other movie that has a cult following. And so I realized way before the show, the soundtrack on cassette sells for like $50. The LP sells for $100. The movie on VHS would get you at a time, get you $100 on a VHS. So when I rolled across a producer's jacket from the movie Rad, I was like...
So you knew that that was really something special.
If I can get $100 for a record from this movie, what can I get...
Yeah.
For a producer's jacket. And when we had it listed, I started having a conversation with a guy because I had it up for like $1,200.
Yeah.
And he said, here's the deal. Him and I had a lot of talks before I actually sold it to him. Plus, we had to make sure we were selling stuff kind of at the filming point of selling. So we always had to set our auctions to end on the day of the filming. And hopefully we'd catch some nice last minute bidding kind of things. So he goes, here's the deal. My wife gives me an allowance every year of things I'm allowed to spend on from the Rad movie because I'm the number one fan in the world of the movie Rad. And he goes, I have to borrow against next year's allowance to get this jacket. And the most I can get is $800. And I paid $10 for the jacket.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean, $1,000 would have been great. But, I mean, that was our first episode. So coming out the gates, I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, we didn't film that episode first. It just became our first episode because it had the greatest.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know that wasn't the first one that aired.
No, it was the first one that aired.
It was.
It wasn't the first
you
one
you didn't watch the film.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
So that's probably not the first one I watched then.
Could be.
Yeah, because they would stack them up on TV.
Yeah.
So they would show a half a dozen at a time.
So, yeah, so he has it in a glass display case in his living room. Like,
oh, that's awesome.
Like, we have tiki mugs up.
Yeah.
You know, he's got it on a spotlight and everything. And that's great. You know, I like, I like making money, but I also like getting things to where they should be. And that jacket should be at his house.
Yeah, you want it to be at the
right
person.
He never would have found that jacket in Vegas.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, granted, I made a lot of money, but it also ended up in the right person's hands.
Yeah.
So, that's... That's what I enjoy about collecting.
Do you know where some of the stuff that you sell ends up like that? Like for this guy, for example?
Sometimes, you know, sometimes I end up selling to friends by accident. I mean, not by accident, but like...
Yeah, but you... like
A friend will buy something online and then realize it's me.
Right, right.
And I bought something from a member of my group, my 13-board group the other day. I didn't realize I was buying from a member. I bought a cool tiki item. Then when I see the return address, I'm like, dude's in my group.
That's funny. Did they know they were selling it to you?
He goes, oh, shit, I wrote a thank you note and it's still sitting on my desk. He goes, I meant to say something to you. So, so you know, he found something that ended up needed to be at my house.
And so yeah.
I don't mind. I mean, I buy stuff, too, all the time. I mean, I have packages come all day long.
Yeah.
I'm very much a consumer. So I know both sides of the coin, too.
Yeah.
Like, I buy shit all the time.
Well, that's part of how you're successful doing what you're doing because you're not... you're not familiar with just one side of the transaction.
Right.
Yeah.
So yesterday I'm doing a weekly show with my mom called, my mom's 74, her and my dad sell on eBay in their retirement years, and they're making a killing.
Mm-hmm.
They're making like $1,500 a month at 74.
Are you competing with them?
Nah. I mean, people feel that. People get mad, say I've given away the secrets, and I've lost friends over this, and friends that you know, mm-hmm. we've talked about. They're like, you're ruining it for all of us. I'm like, there is more stuff to be found and to be sold and more customers than any million people could handle.
And like what I said earlier, I would argue that if you didn't do it, someone else would have.
So I got no problem that I've taught all these people. But I realized no one was talking to the senior thrifter. So Mom and I do a show called Selling Past Your Expiration Date, Being Thrifty Over 50. And we have a lot of fans. My mom became an instant celebrity because it's the only show talking to senior thrifters and helping them out.
Yeah.
And so we have a lot of fun doing it. And I've helped a lot of older people do it. And I don't mind the competition. I've always said if I could teach enough people that I got nothing else to do, I've always got something else to do.
Yeah.
Like I'm busy all day long, not just buying and selling, but also helping people, doing this, doing that, doing this project, that project, throwing this party. So if I run out of stuff to buy and sell, I'm cool. I'll go do something else. I'll go back to doing game shows.
Yeah. What game shows were you on?
So many years ago, we're living in L.A., and this new show called Beat the Geeks had started.
Beat the Geeks, that's right.
Comedy Central or the Game Show Network. I can't remember nowadays. But the premise was there was a TV geek, a music geek, and a movie geek, and then a guest geek of the week. And the guest geek of the week could be like horror movies, Atari games, whatever. So I answered an ad in the L.A. Weekly. And
they'll
give you like a quiz over the phone, and I'm good at that stuff.
Yeah.
So like, you want to be on the show? I'm like, heck yeah. So I go in and I do pretty well. It's me and another guy for the final round. And I actually thought about it backwards. I had a choice of categories. And I chose what I thought I was better at. And what I should have thought a little bit more was I should have chose to make him pick what he was worse at.
Yeah.
And what I did was what I was better at, but I could have done both. But the one I left him, he was way better at. Mm-hmm. So that's where I'm like, I thought about that wrong, and I'll never do that again.
Yeah.
So on that show, I didn't win. I got parting gifts. I got, I think, a Netflix subscription, which was DVD, in the mail back then.
Yeah.
And
that's funny. I remember that backpack. It was all just DVDs being mailed back and forth. Yep. Yeah.
But while I was there, they said to me, "Hey Jay,"
and a JanSport backpack.
Yeah.
That's like a booby prize.
Oh, yeah. Horrible. They're like, "Hey, Jay, do you know any women that could do this? Because the problem is we're only getting dudes. We need some women on the show." I said, "Oh, my wife's pretty good at this kind of stuff." So I have her come down. So she comes down. And part of that show, and like Jeopardy is the same way, they will ask you a question in the first round. And you cannot buzz in until there's a little light behind the host off camera.
Okay.
So you might know the answer by the third word out of his mouth, but you cannot.
Right. They want him to finish the sentence.
Yes. Could not buzz in. So Stacy was early every damn time. Every damn time. So at the end of the first round, one dude had points and Stacy and the other guy had zero.
Wow.
So somebody had to go on to the next round. So they gave them a impossible to know specifically question. And the closest would move on. So here's the question. You ready?
Yeah.
Now, I'm in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
How many stunt people were credited on the movie Titanic? How many stunt people worked on the movie Titanic?
Oh, is it how many worked on it or how many were credited on it?
Okay, credited. I'm sorry. The actual question was credited.
I would guess how many are zero.
No. The actual answer was like 113 or something.
There was that many credited.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of a trick question.
Well, apparently so did my wife, because you ready for her answer?
Yeah.
1,500.
There wasn't even 1,500 people on the boat.
If you listen to that episode very close, so the other guy reveals his answer, and he had said like 80, and the guy goes, pretty close, it's like 113. And she goes like this. Now, you can't see me on a podcast, but she scrunches her face up like, oh. And I'm like, what did she write? And they reveal her answer and said 1,500. If you listen close, you can hear me go, huh? We get backstage, I go, 1,500?
Where'd you get that from?
You know how long the credits would be if just the stunt people were 1,500?
I know.
But the host was so funny. He goes, "Hey, Stacy, I have one more question for you." And she goes, "What?" He goes, "What are you still doing here?"
Oh, that's hilarious.
So that show ended, and then two producers who I'd worked with went to two different shows. So one calls me and goes, hey.
Oh, so they remember you afterwards.
Yeah. Hey, Jay, I'm doing this new show called The Chair with John McEnroe. I want you to be on it. Now, you do sign a contract that says you can't be on a game show for 12 months, but they didn't apparently seem to care. So when I signed off, I didn't seem to care either.
Yeah.
So the
Well, they had contacted you.
Yeah. The Chair was, it only lasted five episodes. You were strapped to a chair and your heart rate was hooked to a monitor.
Yeah.
And so hours before the show, we had to sit in a room staring at a wall for 2 hours. You couldn't read, you couldn't sleep, you couldn't talk, and do nothing but stare at a blank wall, and it would get your actual resting heart rate.
Okay.
And so as the questions went on, they would say, okay, you have to keep your resting heart rate within like 120%. So if your resting was like...
whatever it was.
80, you had to keep it with like 96 or what? Yeah, 96.
Right. 96, yeah.
And so all these people who didn't know each other, because we're all in this big room together, and then we're only going out one at a time. And what happens is, trivia questions, and then they throw like scary shit at you to try to get your heart rate to jump.
Okay.
I'm pretty good at singing even.
Okay.
All these people had these theories on how they're going to beat the game.
Yeah.
And they all failed right at the beginning.
So they let you talk to each other before?
Before and after, because we were eating lunch together too. But I only lost because I got the question wrong.
Oh.
So if I would have got that question right, I would have went to the next level of money.
Mm-hmm.
And it was John McEnroe. So I answered the first couple questions. And then the first thing they try and do to get me to scare me, they had a monitor, a big lizard.
Yeah.
Come out of the rafters and they laid him right on my chest. And he was huge, like maybe as tall as you.
Okay.
Like his tail was by my toe and his head was by my face. Huge.
That's a big one.
And I'm just like, whatever. My heart rate just kept right where it should be. They smashed this huge piece of glass kind of above my head. I mean, it didn't rain down on me, but it was right behind my head.
Yeah.
Nothing. But the question I lost was, name five of the space shuttles. I named four shuttles, and accidentally I named a rocket.
Oh.
Now, here's the pisser. The day before... okay, so, backing up a smidge. When you're on a game show, you fill out this really long questionnaire because they're looking for the embarrassing or funny thing to talk to you about when they're like, let's meet the contestants.
Right.
And so I'm a huge, huge, huge Spice Girls nerd.
Yes.
Big Spice Girls nerd.
That I know.
And so John McEnroe was up on stage and he goes, hey, Jason, let's meet our contestant. Jason Smith from, originally from Cleveland, Ohio, living here in Los Angeles. It says you're a huge Spice Girls fan. And the crowd starts to laugh and I go, yeah, huge. Can you name them all? I go, yeah. I go, you want their real names or their spice names? Now, the crowd is rolling. So he goes, give me both. And I go, so I go through them and I get to Scary Spice, who's Mel B, who's on America's Got Talent. I go, Mel B, who was Scary Spice, then got married, she became Mel G, then got divorced, now she's back to Mel B, and the whole audience is laughing. And he goes, you know, the contestant who lost yesterday couldn't name three of the five Spice Girls. It could have been my question.
That could have been your question. Oh,
I would have got extra credit. I got named five space shuttles.
But they're not going to give you a question that you have the answer to.
Oh, like... I know. But then I so busted McEnroe's ass.
Uh-huh.
He goes, do you like NSYNC, I suppose? And then we had just seen him at the Rose Bowl. I'm like, oh, yeah, I like NSYNC. I just saw him at the Rose Bowl. And the whole crowd's laughing at me. He goes, you like any good music? Now, do you know who John McEnroe is married to?
No.
The lead singer of the band Scandal from the 80s.
Oh, Patti Smyth.
Yes, I know that. So he goes, do you like any good music? And I say, without missing a beat, I go, you mean like Scandal? Now, only about seven people in the audience laughed.
Because only seven people knew.
Yes, and he went, okay, let's keep playing. Like, I so burned him. But when I lost that question, I had banked $60,000, and I got to keep it all.
Okay.
Well, so I got a big fat check for $60,000. So that check bought me the bedroom furniture I still have.
Okay.
It bought me an Explorer Sport Track.
Okay.
A big TV. I mean, I think I put a down payment on the Sport Track. A big TV, and we went and bought a timeshare in Palm Springs.
That's awesome.
Because we were living in an apartment, but we didn't have a mortgage or really any bills. And so we just...
So you didn't have like a write-off. You wanted to have a write-off.
Yeah, we just blew $60,000 on fun shit.
Yeah.
So then... The other producer went to another show called Russian Roulette. And they said, hey, Jay, want to be on this? Sure.
Now, I don't know Russian Roulette. I heard The Chair, and I've watched Beat the Geeks. But Russian Roulette, I've never heard of.
So it was Mark L. Wahlberg, who I think hosts the...
Yeah, the guy who did Temptation Island.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you there would be contestants, and you would fight for... It was trivia again, and I kicked everyone's ass. And as you lose, you fall through the hole in the ground.
Oh.
So then when there's one contestant left, I could walk with $10,000 or I could pull the lever and I'm on one of...
Is this like, the one that's like way up in the sky?
No.
You know which one I'm talking about?
No, this is so... The drop down is so short. They're like, hey, if you happen to drop, you're so tall, you're going to need to fall back really quick or they'll just see your head above.
Yeah.
So I could have walked with 10 grand or I could have gambled and I pulled the lever. So the trap doors light up. If it lands on me, Russian roulette, boom, I fall through the floor.
Okay.
If it doesn't land on me and I had like a 1 in 6 chance, I win $100,000. Well, I just won 60.
Right.
10,000 would have been nice, but wouldn't have done a lot. 100,000 would have been amazing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so I pulled and it landed on me and I fell through the floor. But I did walk with what I had banked earlier, which was like $2,500.
Okay.
And then another producer called me and said, hey, I'm doing the $10,000 pyramid with Donny Osmond. You want to do
it? Oh, so you were on that.
I was on that, and I won $3,000 on that. Now, I got to the pyramid the first round, and you know how they give you 60 seconds to go to the pyramid? I was to the top one in 28 seconds. That's how good I was.
Wow.
And I couldn't get the top one.
Oh.
I'm going to give it to you now. You ready?
Yeah.
You know how the pyramid works, right?
So
if I said things like red, orange, yellow, you would say?
Colors.
Types of colors, or not names of colors.
Names of colors, okay.
Mink coat. A yacht. A Porsche.
Things that rich people have?
Mink coat, yacht, large diamond rings, a box at Madison Square Garden.
Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous?
See, that's where I was too. I kept dancing around it, and the answer was luxury items.
Luxury items, okay.
I was there. I would have had 10 grand. And I did that with Dweezil Zappa when he was dating... The chick that sang Stay from the Reality Bites soundtrack. Lisa Loeb.
Okay.
Lisa Loeb and Dweezil. And then you're with one celebrity the first half. I was with Lisa, and she was really cute to look at.
Yeah.
And then I moved to Dweezil, and I would have went to the second round, but he screwed it up. Because you can't say the clues you're given.
Yeah.
And the clue was like, camera bag, and he said, you put your camera in this. So I lost going to the pyramid again. Because dipshit said
because
camera.
He said it, yeah.
So Dweezil cost me 10 grand.
Wow. Oh, well.
So, yeah. So my and Stacy's parting gifts on Beat the Geek was Britney Spears Skecher roller skates.
They're those wheelies, right? They look like tennis shoes or sneakers and they have wheels inside.
Exactly.
Oh, that's funny. And they have them in adult sizes?
Yeah, but I sold them on eBay.
Oh, did you really?
Because she wasn't going to roller skate. I mean,
oh, yeah.
So that was my game. That was my game show history.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was fun. It's fun because I enjoy it. I'm good at games.
Do you ever plan on doing any more game shows?
You know, I thought about it because there's a couple things that I think I would do quite well at. I always thought I could do. I wanted to do Fear Factor. It's even though it's back on now.
Yeah,
they're using young.
Is Joe Rogan still doing it?
No,
it's a different
ludicrous
guy now.
It's on MTV.
Oh, okay.
And it's all young booby stacked dudes. You know.
Yeah.
But the thing that bummed me out, the thing that pissed him about Fear Factor production and Joe Rogan for that matter. Is I waited in line at Hollywood and Highland for hours to get in for a tryout. And then I did interviews and all this stuff. And I didn't make the cut, obviously. You never see me on Fear Factor. Because I fully believe I could eat anything.
Yeah.
I fully believe that.
Do you really?
Yeah. We used to go to a restaurant called Typhoon in Santa Monica.
Yeah, I know Typhoon.
And I would eat crickets and I would eat worms. And
I've
I would
eaten
eat
all
scorpions.
That too.
Yeah,
I've eaten all that too.
I think I could do the 1,000-year-old egg. I think I could do balut. It would suck, but I think I could
do it. No, balut doesn't suck. Actually, if you ate balut, you'd wonder what the big deal was.
Okay.
It tastes like a hard-boiled egg. That's it.
But, so I do all this, and then cut to about a month later, Joe Rogan's on Howard Stern.
Yeah.
I am too tall, and I weigh too much to ever be on that show. There's limits, but they don't tell you that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I can lose weight, but I can never be 6'2". Never.
Right.
Because a lot of the harness stuff, you cannot be 6'5". Might get your head lobbed off. Okay, tell me that. I wasted 5 hours.
Yeah, standing in line.
Yeah. I'm like, ugh. But I fully believe I could do that. So, I mean, you know, if I ever have a lull in my day, which, haha, never happens, I could see myself doing some more game shows. They're fun.
Yeah.
Plus, when you win 60 grand, they're a lot of fun.
Heck, yeah. Now, do you have to pay the taxes at the end of the year, or do they just, they don't take it out when you win it?
Nope.
Oh, so they give you the whole thing.
I will tell you this. So we're
because that's how you hear people, like, they win a car.
Oh, yeah. They get,
they get screwed. Yeah.
Because they don't think about that. So here, we were living in Long Beach, and at that moment, we had been in Long Beach for about a year when I got that the 60 grand.
Mm-hmm.
I had never, ever went over the hill to the valley. We'd been in Long Beach for a year, and I'd never been in the San Fernando Valley.
Right.
And so, for a while, I was thinking, all these people say LA is so polluted. I had never seen it. So as I'm going up the 405 and I'm coming crashing over the top of the hill to come down into the valley, you could see the brown line.
Yeah.
I had to pick up the check in Sherman Oaks.
Oh, that's funny.
And I'm like,
so that's what they're talking about. Yeah, you're sitting in all of that. One time my son said, "Wow, look how much smog there is over there." I'm like, "Buddy, we're in that right now." It's not over there.
That's the other joy of Vegas, because we're in the valley. Mm-hmm. Vegas is the, you know, if you don't know, Vegas is the bottom of a mountain range all the way around,
mm-hmm.
right at the bottom. So the smog sits and hangs, but when we get the crazy winds, like, it never goes away here. When the crazy winds come, it blows right out of the valley. So there'll be 3-4 days where there's just no pollution in the air
until
it builds back up. But all of a sudden you're like, "Oh, my lungs feel fuller."
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah. What's the name of that valley? That's Paradise Valley, right? Isn't that what they call that?
Well, Paradise is one of the unincorporated parts of the town. I don't think it's called Paradise Valley.
I thought that was the name of that
valley. Maybe I'm wrong. But it's weird because Vegas is actually small.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at GPS, you're in Paradise, you're in Winchester. Most people are like, "What the hell are these things?"
Right.
So when you like log in, like, you know, Facebook, "I'm at this restaurant in Vegas," it doesn't say Vegas, it says Paradise.
Right.
And so it's so annoying. It is so annoying. I live there, and I don't even know where the perimeters are.
Well, what's crazy to me is that you're in Henderson, and you're just on the other side of the airport,
yeah.
basically, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm right at the line of Henderson to Vegas.
This episode is brought to you in part by Tiki Bosco. As one of the first modern tiki carvers, tiki mug makers, and tiki bar designers, Tiki Bosco has been making his vintage-inspired art, mugs, and tikis for over 30 years. To check out his unique handcrafted creations, pick up a hand-carved tiki, tiki mug, or purchase a custom-made piece of art, go to tikibosco.com or follow him on Facebook or Instagram at Tiki Bosco. This episode is also sponsored by Tiki Tea. Founded in 1961, the Tiki Tea is a family-owned and operated tropical drink bar practicing the lost art of exotic cocktail mixing. Come try their house specialty, the Ray's Mistake, a delicious concoction of botanic liqueurs, passion fruit, gin, and rum for only $6 on Wednesdays until 9 p.m. The Tiki Tea is located at 4427 Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood, California. For more information, check out their website, tiki-ti.com. The Tiki Tea, ground zero for tropical drinks.
Let's talk tiki. We talked everything else. Let's talk tiki, because you've got a pretty impressive collection.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You know, that's the one thing reason I have not posted pictures in your home tiki bar builds, because the one thing I never did, for two reasons, is all the wall and ceiling treatments.
Oh, okay.
Two reasons. I'm certainly not as handy as you and a lot of our other friends, like Beth, Dave. Beth and Dave are very handy at putting things together. But also, you know, we moved. I just wanted to get the collection up. So all of a sudden, the stuff's already up. And I'm like, "Do I really want to tear it all back down?"
I was going to say, if you were ever going to build a room, you would have to vacate all your stuff out of it.
Yep.
And you've got a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I would say of all our friends, I pretty much probably have the biggest collection.
Your whole house.
Yeah, because most of our friends have one room, maybe two. I have two stories, almost 4,000 square feet, and it's full.
It's full.
Everything's got a spot. And I would love the look of your room. I would love to do the wall treatments, the ceiling treatments. There's also a point where, I mean, I just run out of time in my day every day anyway, and the house is already set up. So, you know, I hate to put up pictures of white walls, even though most of the wall's covered in art and tikis and stuff.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
And I have great rooms. I just don't have, I did not get that extra step in. But
I know what you're saying.
It bums me out a little bit because I like, I mean, this is the look I always want. Have you ever been in Judd's one up in Napa Valley?
Well, I have not.
Holy.
I shouldn't say this, but I'm going to say it. I've seen it. I know that he doesn't like people taking pictures of it.
Wait, you saw a picture?
I saw a picture.
Oh, Judd.
So I know he doesn't like people taking pictures of it, but I saw a picture. And I'm not going to say who showed me the picture, because then that would be outing that person. But I,
Martin Kate.
It's great. It looks awesome. And it wasn't Martin, for the record.
I was going to say, because
I don't want to get him in trouble. So, it's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we've wanted 1,000 different tangents. The one thing I was really happy about when I taught about tiki for my webinar, you know, the main point was, the first thought was only to teach people what to buy to sell. And then I was thinking about your group, and I was thinking about how people were getting beat up for being new to the scene online quite a bit. And I'm good. I want to educate people. Like, if you want to be in the scene, you should know exactly that this is African and this is PNG.
Yes.
You should know that. But I'm not mad at people who don't know, because when I first started, like probably when you first started, you grabbed what you could and then you started to learn it.
Right.
Like I look back at a picture of my first bar, I got like a Cheeky Tiki, and not early Danny, the crappy Cheeky Tiki mugs on the bar. I'm making a drink with, I think Malibu or some bullshit, you know, and just regular Bacardi. And I'm just like, I look now and I'm like, no, I would never have any of that stuff. But I'm not mad that people want to learn, but what, so that's why I approached you. I said, you want to share this because if nothing else, it'll be a good quick education.
So here's my thought on that. We get new people all the time, but there are people that want to learn. And then there are people that are just not open to it.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and if they're not open to it, then obviously that their quote unquote tiki bar, sometimes they call it a tiki bar when it's really like a beer bar, is never going to be a tiki bar. And as much as you try to say, well, you know what, maybe you could start by doing this and that, they actually get offended by that because they say like, well, you're not going to tell me how to do my bar. Well, I'm not trying to tell you how to do your bar, you know. So if you're not open to it, then maybe we're not the right group for you. That's the way that I word it. And some of them stomp off in a huff. And you know what? If you look at my responses to them, it's never in a way where like, you know, don't let the door hit you on the way out. It's never anything like that. I always try.
Well, that's how I do it, though.
Yeah, I know. That's how you do it. I always try to say, you know, look, if you guys want to if you have questions about your tiki bar, like, is this really proper, or, you know, how did they do this back in the day? Ask questions and we'll help you. We'll point you to the right direction.
Yeah.
You know, at least my moderators will. You know, I can't guarantee the behavior of all the people in the group, but my moderators are not going to, you know, make you feel bad. They're going to help you. But you have to be open to it at the same time. If you're not open to it, then you know.
And I really don't mind that those who are like on the buffet end still want to enjoy some of what we learn. But if you're going to put yourself out there as a crack tiki bar, it's not going to be.
Yeah, well, I always say you never apologize for the things you like. You know?
No.
I don't apologize for what I like. You like the Spice Girls.
I just learned
what
I love the Spice Girls.
Like the
people
Spice
think
Girl.
That, and people come to my house and I have a whole corner of dolls and purses and CDs. And people are like, oh, you weren't kidding? I go, that'd be a dumb thing to kid about in 2017.
Right.
Like, where's the joke?
Want another one?
Yeah.
You have time for one?
Yeah,
okay.
I got time for one.
All right.
Don't take this away until I finish it.
I thought it was just all ice. Yeah, I've always said,
on,
you know,
me,
like.
Me, I heard this on one of the other podcasts. I'll make sure I hear it on mine.
There you go.
There we go.
There you go.
But what I thought was really cool is in teaching that webinar, some of my peeps who weren't planning on getting into the scene fell in love immediately.
Yeah.
And someone made a post the other day that, because I told everyone, you know, if you just sign up for Pandora, it's free. There's an Exotica channel. And I got so many people going, oh my God, we only listen to that Exotica channel now. So here is 2017, and I'm introducing people to music from the 50s that they didn't even know existed, and they're loving it.
There
and I
go.
Love that part of teaching people.
Yeah.
I love that part of expanding people's horizons and enjoying something new.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, like, and speaking of which, we're talking about enjoying something new. I got to go thrifting with you last week.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm not a big thrifter. I mean, like, I'm a thrifter as a collector, but I'm not a thrifter as a reseller.
Right.
And so thrifting is not something that it's something I used to really enjoy. I don't enjoy it much anymore because I don't find anything anymore. But, you know, like, doing what you do, and it's not something that I do, but it's something that I want to learn. But this podcast has taken up all my time. But here's what I'm getting at. So I got to go thrifting with you, and it was kind of cool because it was like a private lesson, you know? So you're pointing out, okay, this is what you got to look for when you look at cassettes. And then you see, like, so see, now here's the third one, and so I'm going to group these together. You want to make sure all the sponges are in the tapes, and blah, 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 right?
Yep.
And then we looked at the underwear, just like you talked about women's underwear, right? This is what you want to look for. And we looked at clothing, and we looked at the plush dolls, which I have no idea what to look for in plush dolls. And you pointed out a couple of things to me. So I'm thinking, oh, this is great. I'm going to have to give this a try. So, you know, expanding your horizons along that line.
I always tell people, get outside your comfort zone. Conquer what you know. Like, I conquered the music. I always conquered the music and whatever tiki stuff I could find. And then one day, I'm like, there's a lot of other stuff here.
Yeah.
I got to start selling other things. Because once you can conquer every section, you can make more money, expand your horizons, find cool stuff that you wouldn't notice. Like, my wife, who is not a thrifter and really hates it for the most part, taught me something. I'm the king of the thrifters, and she taught me something.
So oh, really? What'd she teach you?
We're in Tucson at a Savers thrift store. And I always combed the women's dresses at that time just for vintage muumuus and vintage Hawaiian dresses.
Okay.
And so I did the dresses already, and I'm on some other section, and my wife is walking up with one of the coolest bark cloth muumuus I'd ever seen in my life. The coolest. And I go, where the hell was that? She goes, oh, they're always in the nightgown section. I go, always in the nightgown section. I go, when were you planning on telling me that? Because at that point, I had not shopped women's pajamas. I do that now. But I'm like, wow, the master became the student like that.
Just like that.
Within a split second, I'm like, I had no idea. Why haven't you shared this with me?
What are some of the things that your group has taught you? That's something, because I know you're always teaching them something.
Well, I sold a $70 pair of women's like stripper heels the other day, and I've never bought women's shoes. My friend Nadine, who I host a show with called Thrifty Business with J&A, she's a big girly girl.
Okay.
And so she's always doing women's shoes and women's dresses and stuff that I'm just like, if it ain't vintage wine, I really don't care that much. But I started looking at shoes a little bit deeper, and I started pulling out some women's shoes, and I sold a pair for $70 the other day. That would have not been me even like 2 years ago.
So when you're selling women's shoes, though, do they have to be, I mean, like, I couldn't imagine buying a pair of used shoes.
But I sell used bras, dude, so, you know.
Yeah, but those can be washed.
Well, shoes can be Lysol.
I suppose. I guess what I'm asking is that, do they have to be a certain condition before you'll pass them?
Well, yeah, and it depends what you're buying. If you're buying stripper heels, especially if they're really, like, I live in Vegas, I really find, like, stripper, like, thigh-high nurse boots, you know.
Right.
You're going to see the marks where they've clicked their heels together 1,000 times.
Right, right.
But someone needs them for their nasty nurse
costume
at Halloween. Yeah. And so, you know, you have to base it on the actual product it is. If you find some 1950s Converse, they can be beat to shit and people still pay you big money for them, you know. If you find 2017 plain blue Converse, I wouldn't buy beat up ones. But you find some limited edition ones, you know, there's huge money in sneakers. Sneakerheads are all the rage right now.
So going back to Tiki, what are you finding nowadays?
I find it all still.
Are you still finding stuff?
And I used to thrift 3 to 4 days a week. I thrift maybe one a week, sometimes none because I'm busy. But I always find mugs. I always find Coco Joe stuff. I always find cool, like, seashells and stuff. And I'm still finding consistently tons of stuff.
Yeah.
Tons of stuff. If I go out, I'll come home with 3 to 5 Tiki Hawaiian items every single time. And good stuff, not just crap.
Yeah.
You know, I'll buy some crap and then I'll put it together in a big lot and sell the lot. But for the most part, I'm bringing home good stuff that if it isn't already in my collection, it could easily be, you know?
Right.
Okay, so now is the portion where I take over the show.
Okay.
Because I'm so strong-willed, I have to take over everything.
This is, this is our third drink. This is a Milky Way.
Another nice
accoutrement. I'm serving this one last because this is really a dessert drink. And, you know.
Oh, yeah, I was watching the ingredients.
We finish our.
Well, this should be done with portrait mode. Heck yeah.
We finish our meals with desserts, right? So.
Holy cow, yes. That is very nice and desserty.
Desserty.
Okay, so, two things.
Okay.
First, I have a present for you.
Oh, that's very nice of you.
A friend of mine, husband worked for a liquor distributor or something. So she goes, I'm going to send you some rum. What else do you like? I'm like, oh, tequila. So she sent me what I thought was a bottle of tequila.
Okay.
So I open it, pour a little bit, and a little shot glass. I drank it. I'm like, the hell was that? Nope, mezcal.
Mezcal.
That's why I asked you.
I love mezcal. That's why you texted me the other day. Oh, how cool is this bottle? So the bottle is a skull.
Like a sugar skull.
A sugar skull. Yeah, it looks like a Dia de los Muertos.
Yeah. So there's only about this much out of the bottle.
Very cool.
And I've been wondering, like, who am I going to give this to? Because I didn't like it.
Sangre de vida.
So, maybe in a cocktail, but just straight up, I was like, ugh, no way.
Wow, that's very nice.
So, there you go. There's a present.
Thank you. Now, okay, so let me give you something.
Oh, geez.
I have something for you.
All right.
And I hope that you like this. I think you're going to like it. You like
rum. No pressure while I'm on your...
You like rum.
Oh, heck yeah.
You know, I have a rum sponsor. So, Tandoi Rum, made in the Philippines.
I heard you talk about this. And you know what? I heard you talk about this. I go, I've never even heard of that rum.
So this rum is, they were founded in 1854, 80 years before Don the Beachcomber. And the bottle you're holding is a bottle of gold, which is aged 5 to 7 years.
A, thank you very much. B, yeah, I don't have this. Never had it.
So there you go.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Wasn't expecting parting gifts.
Yeah. Well, now you get something to... Do you like... I'll have some more Tandoi stuff I can send off with you too. So before you go.
Cool. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, sponsor.
You're welcome.
Tandoi. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, now I'm going to sell you something.
Okay. You wanted to sell me something.
I want to sell you something. Because that's what I do, man. I buy things and I give them to the right people. Here's what I know about my friend Adrian. My friend Adrian only likes vintage shirts.
That's right.
Bar cloth.
That's right.
And cool.
Hard
to find.
Yeah,
prints.
Yeah.
I bought this to flip. I'm going to flip it to you. I'm still going to make money if you're interested.
Okay.
But I'm not making what I think is worth.
Okay.
Because I think it's so cool, and I think it's your size, too. Well, the other thing I know about my friend Adrian, he's about a medium.
I'm between sizes right now.
This might be hopefully a fuller cut, because this shirt's awesome. Like, if it was my size...
Okay.
If you don't like it, that's cool.
I'm going to say like this. I wish I was still a medium.
If you don't like it, don't fit. That's cool. No big deal. But
that's okay.
But I figured I'd give you first dibs because I think it's that badass.
Yeah, I can already tell. I can tell you this much. It won't fit me, but I'm not going to let it leave the house.
All right. So here's the deal. I spent $30 on it. I thought it was worth $100.
Okay.
If you want it, I'll sell it to you for $50, and that way I made $20.
Okay. Yeah, I'll do that.
Dude. Where,
for those, that's a beautiful shirt.
Isn't it amazing? And for those you can't see, it's a Guam bar cloth shirt. Guam, where America's day begins, because they're across the...
That's a beautiful shirt.
Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
So let's pretend it fits exactly. Was I right on with thinking this
you
would be
totally
the perfect
were.
Shirt for you?
You totally were.
So the thrifter guy actually thrifted something and sold it to the host
you
of the podcast.
You know what? I'm going to have to lose weight just to fit in that
And
shirt.
Look at the collar. It's definitely old, but it's in great shape. I mean, isn't that amazing?
This shirt is so perfect.
Well, cool. I'm glad you like that shirt. I knew you would. I mean, I got it.
Dude, if it were bigger, it would be so fucking perfect.
Yeah, that is.
But I'm not going to let it go.
That's an amazing
This is like,
shirt.
So, you know, when I go
it's
thrifting.
A goal shirt.
Yeah, if when I go thrifting, if I see a shirt that I like, I don't leave it. I mean, whether it fits me or not, whether it's too small or too big, I'll still take it.
You know, when I find something that's just absolutely amazing that I wish I was short, you know, I'm like. That shirt. And I told him, I said, you sell this too little. It's actually a person in my group. And so she was happy that I bought it. And I think she paid like $2 for it or whatever. I paid 30. And I'm like, oh, that's a $100 shirt. Easy.
Well, here's the thing. It is a $100 shirt. You know, the sizes today are different than the sizes back then. So now, I mean, like, so when you're selling clothing, you can't just throw the size up there. You actually have to measure the shirt,
even
right?
Specifically with jeans almost are never what they're marked. They shrink a little bit
when
you wash them.
A lot
of people will alter the legs if they're not exactly right. So when you're listing, we're going to go nerdy eBay here for a minute. When you're listing on the title, you never list the size tag because that's the only thing the customer's ever going to notice. Mm-hmm. So if the tag says 36, 34, so we're talking men's jeans, 36, 34, 36 waist, 34 inseam, but it measures out like 35, 32, that's what's in your title. Because they ain't never going to be 36, 34. So in the description, I will say, by the way, the tag reads 36, 34.
I was going to say, because if you send it to them and it says something else, they're going to freak out, right?
We sold a shirt the other day that was a Japanese anime weird, some stupid weird fucking thing. I don't even know what it was, but I sold a used t-shirt for $65. It's that extra large, but if it was extra large Japanese, it was like medium American. So I wrote medium throughout the whole thing. And I did mention this slightly. By the way, tag says extra large, but these measurements are only a medium.
Okay.
Because someone extra large would buy it and be like, what?
Yeah, yeah.
Snap.
Yeah.
So I want to tell you, and you might not know this, you haven't been at my house in a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. I'll come out in a month.
All right. I still have a lot of Poly Pop art hanging up. And when I say Poly Pop, I don't mean the in general sense. I mean you. I still have a lot of your art hanging on my walls.
Cool.
So you are part of the Den of Sin, brother.
Awesome. I appreciate that. My first thought when you said that, I was like, oh, well, that's embarrassing. But it's all good.
No, great. You know, because with me, like you said on the podcast I'm listening to, a collector keeps buying.
Yes.
Not you're a decorator.
Right.
Which I'm fully with you. But there's a point where my wife's going to be like, get the fuck out. So when new comes in, old has to go out. So the collection stays the same size, which is full. The house
right.
is full. But also, I watch the price of tiki mugs like the stocks.
Yes.
Every night, I look at every sold tiki mug every night on eBay. And so when I see a mug all suddenly worth $300, $400 that I paid $10 at a garage sale 10 years ago, bye-bye.
So that's how you stay on top of it.
Stay on top of it every night.
Because I wonder about that. We have friends like Sabu and Dr. Z who do a lot of thrifting and eBaying. And I always wonder how do they always know what the market is doing?
I know exactly what the market is doing. When I tell people in my group, when they find a tiki mug and they post it, I go, okay, You're going to list it at $35. You're going to put best offer, and you're going to shoot for about 26-ish.
Yeah.
And then it always comes in like 25, 27. Like, I know my stuff.
Yeah.
And so there's probably, I think we have about 850 or 900 mugs right now.
Right.
And there's only about 20 that will stay forever.
Yeah, yeah.
Some that were emotionally specific to us. Some that are holy grails that Noah would ever get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest can come and go. And same with the artwork. Like, I actually have to peel off some Doug Horns. I got like four waiting to go up, and I got no room.
Wow.
So I'm going to sell some early ones. But your stuff has always stayed from the day we bought it. It's always been part of the
house. I'm flattered. Thank you. That's very nice of you to say.
It like, the Aloha Room sign fits perfectly over the doorway as you're walking from the downstairs bathroom into the family room. So besides the fact that we love it, it also fits exactly perfect to where it is, and so nothing else will ever go there.
Cool.
And so, so you always be part of it, not just because we're buddies, but I liked what I bought from you when you were doing art like that back in the day, and it looks good, because it's different.
Thank you.
It's different
Thank
than the other
you.
Stuff we collect, so.
Well, I appreciate that. That's very flattering to hear. I'm glad that we're still hanging out, too, because you know that the day that I met you with the beach ball and everything, I never thought that 15 years later we'd still be hanging out and having cocktails and doing some booze swapping.
Yeah, booze swapping.
Booze swapping.
Booze swapping, so, shirt selling.
Before we wrap, what is the future for Tiki Pug Music? And do you have any projects coming up?
I've always got like seven irons in the fire of things that could happen. So nothing hugely specific. But I am going to be teaching classes this fall around the country. I did my first classroom class. I've always taught classes in the thrift store. So I take a group of like 10 or 11 or 12 out.
Right.
We kind of go section by section. I point out what you should buy. Sometimes we find it exactly like I call it. Sometimes we don't. And then my friend who's been helping me with some of my business stuff said we should do, because I was going to Atlanta for something else, he said we should do a classroom class. We rented out like a meeting room in a Hampton Inn.
Mm-hmm.
And the sellout was 36 people. If we went beyond 36, then we'd have to get rid of the tables. We want people to be able to either write on their computers or write on notes. And we sold it out pretty quick. And at the end, people thanked me for paying them because I taught them a four-hour class that took them from, even though we're not in a thrift store, here's like 70 things to look out for in all these different categories. Here's how to take pictures. Here's how to list it. And my friend at the end said, fuck yeah, let's take this on tour.
I'd love to take that class.
So it's.
I'm going to tell you right now, just when you're talking about like how much material you cover, that day that we went thrifting, just that short amount of time we spent at the thrift store, I was thinking, okay, I got to remember this, and I got to remember this, and I got to remember this, and I got to remember this. He hand out a lot of information. And when you did the Tiki Talk webinar, same thing. For $10, the amount of information that you doled out, it's so worth the money.
Yeah, and that's what I always... There is no one who has ever said I didn't get my money's worth. None.
Oh, yeah.
Now, some people might not like me and might not like what I do, but if you paid for anything I've done, you get your money's worth. I go above and beyond to the point where my friends say, you should charge more.
Yeah, see?
And I'm like, I'm cool. Like, you know, my wife and I make a nice living. I'm cool where I'm at. So I'm cool with the prices I charge. I'm cool with what I'm doing. I'd rather reach more people than less. So if you keep your prices reasonable... when people walk up to you and say, thank you for letting me give you $60, you know you're hitting on something.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we're going to, so you'll find me around the country. You find me on Facebook. It's really easy. It's Facebook/TikiPug. Super easy to find me. My big group is called the Thrifting Board. It's free for anybody who wants to talk thrifting. Even if you're not like to resell, if you're just collecting for your home bar and you find something, you don't know what it is, with 29,000 members as of June 2017, soon to be 30,000 and more, you post something within 10 minutes, you'll get a full history of what that item is,
yeah,
where it was made, who made it. It's insane the amount of expertise I have amongst those 29,000 people. I mean, I grew up in a town of 5,000, and I run a Facebook group of 29,000. It blows my mind.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, Thrifting Board, come on down, hang out. We have a lot of fun there. And you'll just find me drinking at tiki bars all over the country, because when we decided to do this tour this fall, he said, all right, where do you want to go? I go, well, I want to go where there's tiki bars. And he started to laugh, and my friend knows me. He goes, oh, wait, you're serious. Hell yeah.
I was going to say, yeah, you got
to
follow.
Look, dude, I always want to go to the Sip and Dip. Can we get enough people in a Montana class?
Oh, there like, you go. Oh, yeah, you can. I'm sure you can. Yeah. I don't think that there's any town that you can go to. Well, maybe I'm wrong about that, but...
I got a couple peeps in North Dakota. Shout out North Dakota peeps. There's not a lot of people up there.
Okay, okay.
They're in remote corners where they got to drive like 47 miles to get to one thrift store.
Okay, so maybe I stand corrected there, but I don't think that there's a lot of places like that. I think that...
Right, yeah, the majority of where most people live. Yeah, so if you want to learn about thrifting, if you want to see how to make money, and look, you don't have to be a full job or full lifestyle. You can have a career and then do this part-time. Now, look, I only do... And I'll share all my figures, too. Like, I don't hide nothing. I'm usually on the road 2 weeks a month, or at least twice a month I travel to someplace. Sometimes it's a week, sometimes it's 4 or 5 days. And I have a part-time assistant. So there's really no one full-time working in my office. And I do like $5,500 to $6,000 a month in eBay sales.
Yeah.
So if I can do that half-assing it and traveling around the country and going to tiki bars and all this stuff, if I just sat down and did none of these other projects, didn't have Facebook groups, I could be doing over 10 grand a month easy every month.
Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah.
And so I can teach you that. So if you want to, like, say you want to go to Europe and you want to pay for it without taking it out of your normal paycheck, that can be done.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm paying for Europe. We're not even touching any money coming from paychecks. I'm paying for Europe from just all eBay stuff.
That's great.
And we had some timeshares. So that covered almost all our rooms. And we're flying business class because I'm like, I'm 6'5".
Yeah.
And I socked away enough. Like, I keep putting my... And I lucked out. I married a wife who's got a great career.
Yeah. So if there's a lesson to be learned...
Oh, there is. Marry up. 110%.
And
big ups to Steph and Stace.
That's right. And keep them happy. Yeah, big ups to the wives that they let us do what we enjoy doing.
That's the other key to a good marriage, too, is you and I get to do what we enjoy doing.
Yeah.
And our wives don't put any kind of restriction on us. Because I see a lot of people who, on both sides, men and women, who I'm friends with that are just like, oh.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like... Because people are like, oh, they don't realize Stacey's into tiki too. When they see the whole house, they're like, how'd she let you do the whole house? I'm like, she likes it too. Now, I'm more of the collector and the buyer and the putting her up, but she enjoys it all.
Now, I don't have as much as you have, but before you leave, I'm going to show you some more of my collection upstairs.
All right.
The Desert Oasis room is only, like, the mugs that you see in here is only a third of my collection. So.
All right.
I like you. I'm somewhere around 1,000 mugs. So
cool.
I'll show you the rest before you take off today. But anything else that you want to promote?
No, that I mean, like
so
I said,
facebook.com/tikipug.
Yeah, is me directly. I'll answer any questions any time of the day. Thrifting Boards, my Facebook group, and then my YouTube shows with my friend Nadine is called Thrifty Business with Jay and Nay. It's usually on Thursday nights, 9 p.m. in the East, 6 p.m. on the West. We it's basically a nighttime talk show about thrifting. We have segments like shipping tips, eBay tips, scores of the week, duds of the week, and then we have a guest who talks about. You know, we've had other sellers.
And I love that you talk about your duds.
Oh, the duds.
Because
man.
We need to know what the duds are.
Heck yeah. We have eBay employees. We've had postal carriers. All aspects of our job.
That's awesome.
We've had them all. And then I do the show with my mom called Selling Past Your Expiration Date and Being Thrifty Over 50 because mom's 74. And then I do a weekly thrift haul show where Nadine and I show the goodies that we found for the week, teaching people what you should be finding in the thrift store, what you should be buying, brand names, bolos, which you learned about. And the like. So YouTube, just Jason T. Smith on YouTube. You'll find all my YouTube shows.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for...
Hey, dude. Thanks for having me. Thanks for
joining the
morning
podcast
cocktails.
Today. Morning cocktails. We had 3 drinks before lunch this morning.
I am on vacation
in
Corona.
And it's a Monday.
And it's a
Monday. So whatever you guys are doing on your Monday, we're doing something more fun.
Yeah.
So anyway, thanks again for joining the podcast. If you guys out there have any questions, comments, or just want to leave a shout out, stop by our Facebook group page inside the Desert Oasis Room or find us on Instagram at Polynesian Pop. Cheers.
Peace.
And aloha.
Akole maluna. Thank you.